Low Life from Theory of a Dead Man. It's our number one song for the second straight week. You can get the entire chart and learn more about my six picks at thesideshowcountdown.com. See you next week for more of the biggest songs in rock and some hand-picked songs for me. I call them treats.
Ooh, that sounds good. Yummy.
Let's get out of here. Let's go get some.
Oh, treats?
Yeah. And we'll play music on the way.
Okay, good.
See ya.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Hi, Jolene.
Hello, Peter.
You've had a busy day.
Busy day. Been all over the place.
Out at the Renaissance.
Yeah, festival. Yeah, it's a great time. Always a great time.
I was slipping there because I think I said to my wife that you were at the Renaissance Center, which is, if you're listening from somewhere else in the world other than Detroit, that's a big building downtown Detroit.
Yes.
GM World Headquarters now, actually.
Right, yeah.
But you were at the Renaissance Festival where everybody dresses up like knights and wenches.
Oh,
and
it's a riot.
Yeah.
It's just a hoot.
Yeah. But you've had a long day.
Yeah, I have. But I'll make it until 1 o'clock.
Well, hey, folks, get a hold of us because we're going to be gone for the next two Sundays. Next Sunday is September 4th. It's the day before Labor Day, and we always have that day off. And then the next Sunday is September 11th, the 10th anniversary of the attack on the United States, and we just decided, I don't know, just don't want to be arguing about politics, don't want to be talking about whether 9/11 was an inside job, so we're going to let just all the memorials and the reflections and the grief and what have you roll on without us.
Right, and we'll be in touch, though, via Facebook.
Yeah, definitely.
In those 2 weeks.
I got to tell you, on Facebook, folks, maybe, I don't know, you've been doing so much with it. Give it the rave up. And Debbie, as well, has been doing. You know, Ed from the Detroit area, St. Clair Shores, maybe, he was saying, Peter, why don't you, me, personally, get on Facebook? Because, and he often, well, we should tell people, our Facebook page is facebook.com/nightcall.
I dare you to like us.
And all of a sudden, though, it's like, boom, it's just exploding, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's doing well, and it's nice. We're getting a little more active on there. You are participating a little bit more.
Well, I have to
say. And I think it helps, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm a good time and everything, but, you know.
Yeah, well, but, you know, here's the difference, though. For instance, I thought, well, I'll bet you this would get a lot of people responding. Like I said.
What was that? Did you get excited?
No, but I don't know what happened. Oh. You know what happened? The one of these, the console, there you go.
Are we all okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't an earthquake.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
Where are we talking about? Oh, Facebook. Yeah,
yeah.
Facebook. Here, let me go to it. In fact, if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and then there's a nice photograph of Jelena and okay, one of me. Come on.
No, it's a great one of you. It's the best one ever.
But actually, it's a nice picture of the both of us.
Yeah.
And who took that?
I don't even remember.
Jade. Almighty Jade.
Thank you, Jade.
Anyway, so I thought, well, this would really get the people responding. So I said, hey, what books are you folks reading this summer? And I said, I'm reading The God of the Hive by Laurie King, a crime novel sort of based on Sherlock Holmes and this fanciful wife that he never had in any event. And also Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through Three Decades of War in Afghanistan by Edward Jaraday, who's actually I did an interview with and is going to play later tonight. And this guy had these real-life adventures that are over the top, including meeting face-to-face Osama bin Laden, who said, you get out of here or I'm going to kill you. And if I see you again, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, my God.
And then he saw him again. So that's on the interview.
Oh, my gosh.
So let me see. About 8 or 9 people, 8 comments we had. However, we then posted something else.
Oh, yes, about the story about Bush and Cheney.
Yeah.
And
these Vermont towns.
Yeah, that they want to sue them for war crimes.
Yeah, they want to arrest them.
Arrest them.
Yeah.
Where
is it? Okay, here it is. Vermont towns vote to arrest Bush and Cheney. Voters in 2 Vermont towns on Tuesday approved a measure that would instruct police, are you ready for this, to arrest former President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney for, quote, crimes against our Constitution, according to local media in Vermont. The non-binding symbolic measure, it says, passed in Brattleboro and Marlboro, in a state known for taking liberal positions on national issues, instructs town police to extradite them to other authorities that may reasonably contend to prosecute them.
Wow. It's amazing. Yeah, so a lot of people responded to that on our Facebook page. And
where is it now? I just saw that. How many? Like, I don't know, 30 people?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to weigh in, what do you think? In fact, Jelena asks, agree or not? And Jelena says, we do, meaning she and I.
Yes, absolutely.
Or is it her and me?
And did you, she and...
Her.
Her.
Him and he. Never mind.
Peter, don't!
No, I know.
Now, are you going to pay attention? I say to people, what's on your mind? Did you read through those? Should we
go through those?
At all?
Go ahead. Yeah, a few of them.
Well, yeah.
Wait a minute. What you're talking about is you posted then.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, what's
Nightcall
on your mind?
We are now. And
so we got about 14 people responding to that.
Roger says slave wages. That sounds like, he was responding to someone else about slave wages. That sounds like Walmart, he said. We agree with that. Rich wants to talk about automobiles and poverty.
Yeah. Ed wants to talk about why should labor support candidates that make promises and then stab them in the back when get elected. Use the money for organizing the unorganized. We have no real democracy left in this country. Direct action is the only option. And we'll talk about that actually in a little while. By the way, though, this is not a Facebook program. This is a call-in talk show.
Everything is Facebook now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And by the way, what do we say? Detroit's longest running talk show. Actually, this is America's longest running talk show. Can you believe that? This has been going on since 1970, and with a variety of hosts, including me. Probably me having the longest.
I would say so.
Yeah, I mean combined, because I left. They've other people did it. Harvey Ofshinsky, who also founded the Fifth Estate magazine in the 1960s, started it, and then Sheila Rushlow, and I'm forgetting everybody else who did it. I can see him. The guy I took over from, like, in 1982.
And I guarantee you someone out there can answer it.
Mike, come on, help me, folks. Anyway, so But because this, I think we talked about this on the air, because this is a weekly show, not a daily show, that it's never gotten the credit. Although there were times in the 1970s when I hosted when it was a five-day-a-week show.
Grueling, Peter.
Grueling. Grueling indeed. We will have a podcast available at noon tomorrow, Monday. Thank you for to Athena and to Sarah. So that is that all the biz? That's all the biz.
Phone numbers, did we give those?
No.
No, we
didn't. 313-298-WRIF.
It's 313-298-9743. And we welcome your topics as well.
Yeah. And so what do you think? Should Bush and Cheney be arrested and prosecuted for crimes against the Constitution? I'd say yeah. I'd say
you know, what I said, I posted this on my page. Well, if everyone is so now newly concerned about the sanctity of the Constitution, let's go all the way with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, has a new book out. And talk about self-serving memoirs. What's our favorite columnist in the New York Times? The woman with the red hair.
Maureen Dowd.
Maureen Dowd. She said his knife and teeth daughter, Liz, you know, who like she's co-wrote it with him. And Colin Powell, who was Secretary of State and got up and lied in the United Nations on behalf of Bush-Cheney,
yeah,
so they could lie their war into the
way into the war, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he said it's filled with cheap shots. Yeah.
Right on.
Okay. Right on. I love it. Okay, what was the big event this week? Oh, yeah, a little bit of water coming aboard.
Oh, my gosh.
So we can have a non-political discussion, right?
Gary,
no.
Nope, too bad. No. Everything's political.
Can you believe this? Suddenly, all the right-wingers, all the teabaggers are all about this. They're really on how this was this big hype. Now, there is an element of truth to that, to the extent that naturally all the networks and all the cables want to keep you listening.
Well, they want to
keep you watching.
Ratings, 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 and they did it big time.
But on the other hand, there was really no way to tell whether or not this was going to be the storm from hell. Remember, this hit a lot of places just as a tropical, I think it was a Category 1 hurricane when it hit
North
Carolina.
Yeah, then it became a tropical storm.
Then it became a tropical storm. So if it would have been, and there was possibilities that it could have been a 1, 2, or even 3 category hurricane. So I don't get all this. I mean, these right-wingers are so bizarre.
Yeah.
They defy the imagination.
And will continue to defy global climate change.
Now, here, perfect storm of hype. Politicians, the media, and the Hurricane Irene apocalypse that never was. Well, what would have been their deal if it would have actually happened? And what do they think should have happened? Did they think that the mayor of New York shouldn't have evacuated people? Say, well, this will probably kind of...
fingers crossed.
Yeah, it would lessen. Remember, wasn't there a guy, what was his name? George Bush, remember that, in Katrina?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't want to make that mistake again.
Yeah, and let's even back off from politics. The fact that the city was not well enough prepared, that people were going to err on the side of caution. I mean, is anybody opposed to that? I mean, I don't know. I don't even get what these teabaggers are all about and these
because
these
they're really going on about it, aren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, it only led to 18 deaths. You know,
that's people. All. Yeah. I mean, you know.
And only billions and billions of dollars of damage and flooding in lots of places.
Well, and people's power is out.
Still out.
Will be out
still
for
out.
Days. My friends who live in Connecticut just lost it, and Irene's gone out of there.
Yeah. So, you know, this was a hell of a storm. And so I'm not sure. What do you make? Anybody got any idea what to make of this? I mean, are these people just completely crazy?
I think so.
Oh, I think so.
Absolutely.
But here's something that came across from the Borowitz report. It says internet outages, because remember, you know, if you're all the stuff is down, internet outages from hurricane could force people to interact with other people. Officials warn. And FEMA says prepare for unwanted eye contact, awkward silences.
I saw that.
As Hurricane Irene prepared to batter the East Coast, this was a day or so ago, East Coast of the United States, federal disaster officials warn that internet outages caused by the storm could force people to interact with other people for the first time in years.
Oh, no.
News of possible interpersonal interactions created panic up and down the coast as residents braced themselves for the horror of awkward silences and unwanted eye contact. And as officials warned people in the hurricane zone to stay indoors, residents feared the worst. Conversations with members of their immediate family.
Didn't they give suggestions on how to prepare?
Well, yeah. He said, this is from Federal Emergency Management Agency, the FEMA Chief Craig Fugate, who offered these words of advice for people who may be forced into direct contact with other human beings. He said, be prepared. Write down possible topics to talk about in advance.
Right.
Sports is a good one, and of course the weather. Remember, a conversation is basically a series of Facebook updates strung together.
Oh, yes.
He offered these words of hope for those trapped interacting with other people due to an internet outage. At some point, the Wi-Fi will go back on, and hopefully you won't have to go through anything like this again for a long, long time.
Oh,
in a related story, the Reverend Pat Robertson said the best way to prepare for the hurricane is not being gay.
Oh, my gosh, that's a good one.
Actually,
I mean, you have to find some humor out of this, you know?
Did you see what that nutbag Robertson said?
Which the latest, you mean?
Well, you know, there was a little bit of damage by the earthquake. Well, this wasn't the hurricane, but the earthquake,
yeah.
And a couple stones fell down. I didn't realize this. The Washington Monument is the largest stone edifice in the world. I mean, just stones piled on top of one another.
Yeah.
And so a couple of them fell out. They've closed it and all that. They were a little worried.
Not joking.
No, this is true.
Okay, okay.
So Robertson said this could be a sign from God.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
it's a symbol of America.
He's the epitome of insane.
You know what? You've been to the Washington Monument, been to marches on Washington, been there as a tourist. I love Washington.
I love it, too.
At night, and, you know, then
beautiful.
It's got this, what is it? Don't you think it kind of looks like a Klansman, though?
I thought it looked like a...
No. Don't go there. This is a family show. You know, sometimes the Washington Monument is just the Washington Monument.
Well, you started it.
313-298-WRIF. Has anybody else ever thought that, I mean, because it's got like two, you know, where you look out, right?
Right.
So it's got this pointed top.
Yeah.
And then it's got like these two eyes.
That's terrible. Fortunately, now they've got the ML King thing to counteract it then.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Washington had a few slaves.
Well, and yes. They had to cancel the ceremony
for
the new monument to MLK Jr., but...
Actually, there is a incredible, let me get to my website here, what's the man's name? I can't think of it right off the top of my head. But if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, there is an incredible piece by, why is this not coming up here? By who? Who's this man that wrote this? Oh, yeah, Cornel West.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and he wrote a piece called Dr. King Weeps from His Grave, and it's called I Had a Dream, But, and he says that he didn't want a monument. He wanted to end racism and war.
Right, he didn't need that symbol.
Right. So any thoughts, folks? 313-298-WRIF, which is?
313-298-9743.
In a totally unrelated... a little deal, because we'll throw this into the hopper as well. It's people calling in, open line still, though, that the Michigan Court of Appeals has said that that they can't have these medical marijuana patient-to-patient dispensaries
anymore.
Right,
well, there was pot shops in Ann Arbor were raided just the other day.
That's amazing, too.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't really surprise me, because,
I guess,
you know, I knew this is going to take a while to all shake out.
Well, there's an estimated 300 to 400 dispensaries serving nearly 100,000 eligible Michigan patients that may have to close permanently. Now, I know a lot of you think it's just a whole scam. So you know, people can smoke pot and get high and say, oh, I got a backache, you know. And then so you can go get a
card.
You know, patient card.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got kind of doctors that will just write you a card for anything. But... yeah, and sometimes I start thinking that. But, you know, every once in a while you watch this on television, you see people that really have some serious diseases that are using marijuana like that. But you know what? I couldn't care less if people are just using it to get high.
I don't care
so
either.
What? What's the harm? What's the harm? Tell me the harm. Don't tell me it's good, but tell me if you think that this drug should It's not even a drug. This intoxicating substance that is gentler on the body, certainly than alcohol and
or prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs,
like painkillers. And this article in the Detroit News, Michael McShane of Ferndale says, "I'm trying to stay alive." He uses essential marijuana oil on his skin cancer, and he said, "This isn't politics for me. I'm not playing a game. This is the real deal."
Wow. So in a 3-0, the court said Compassionate Apothecary, a cannabis dispensary in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, violates the state's 2008 marijuana law. You know, it could be that it does. And,
Well, they say it can't be patient to patient.
Yeah. Well,
and they can't charge for it. That's the other part of it. Did you get that part?
Yeah. Right. You can't sell it.
Yeah. No sale. It says you can. It allows for delivery and transfer of marijuana, but not the sale.
That's crazy. Man.
The sale is not the equivalent to the delivery or transfer.
You know what? Because the law is what a court interprets it. Like I've said before, the Supreme Court of the United States, and what was it? Was it Dred Scott decision, 1840s or something? I don't have this in front of me, so if I'm making grave errors, please give us a toot. In fact, you can write us always at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Anyway, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld slavery. And then, of course,
let's remember that little tidbit.
And then
right?
In the 1890s, Plessy versus Ferguson, they upheld segregation. So then the courts, of course, reversed that. So within the language of the Michigan law, which allows for medical marijuana, it says delivery and transfer of marijuana. Well, what does it mean, delivery? Like you're going to go deliver it like a paper boy?
Right.
You could certainly interpret this if you were a judge and didn't want to deprive 100,000 people, and say 10% are scamming.
More loosely interpret.
Yeah, you could have 90,000 people that need it are not going to have it any longer. And let's see, among those that closed was Capital City Caregivers, and it won't reopen until it's cleared. Ken said, Director Ryan Basour. There are 40 dispensaries in Lansing, and most of them are shut down as well. He said, there are a lot of upset patients today. We had about 70 patients today, and they all said, how are we supposed to get our medicine? And they don't know how. What the court did today was put a lot of sick patients back into the streets and into the hands of drug dealers. The street dealers are the ones that won today.
And these are the people who finally won this right, you know? I mean, the people voted for this. And now they're just so, like that, taking it away. I predicted something weird like this was going to happen, yeah.
But think about it, folks. Let's say that 10% of the people are scammed. So there's 10,000 people that have a card that allows them legally to have marijuana. They don't really have anything wrong with them. They're just getting
high.
And then they're going out and doing things like eating triple dip ice cream cones.
Oh, how dare they?
Yeah. And sitting there.
The nerve.
Yeah. And watching 6 hours of music videos. And,
or the Food Network.
They couldn't. They'd go crazy. So, I mean,
all joking aside, these are people, a lot of people, don't have an appetite when they're ill, when they have cancer and certain diseases. This one has allowed people to regain their appetite so they're able to eat so they can keep their energy level up so they can actually heal.
Now, let's talk about another kind of addiction that is extraordinarily harmful. In fact, probably the single most harmful addiction, and I'm not talking about Oxycontin, I'm not talking about heroin, I'm not talking about crack cocaine, I'm talking about cigarettes.
Ciggies.
And one of the things that the Michigan legislature did was to make venues less available for people who tend to smoke a lot. That is, people that go to bars.
And restaurants.
So bar and restaurant owners in Michigan now that are upset about Michigan's workplace smoking ban, they're putting in a ban of their own.
Yeah.
Project Private Property Rights in Michigan said Tuesday that about 500 bars statewide plan to ban state lawmakers from their premises.
I mean, that's 500. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And they say that some of them have lost business because of the ban. I mean, I don't know what's...
I've heard that, too. It's hard to tell with the economy how much is what.
Exactly. That's actually an excellent point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Because you have to have some disposable income. I mean, certainly there's, shot and beer, bars, but I mean, damn, when I think about you going in and looking at these, I saw a mixed drink finally for like $12. I see. They're probably thinking, how much will people pay?
Yeah. Yeah. I paid $9 for a margarita last week. I know.
Wow.
It hurt, but it was good.
Yeah, but still. I mean, was it like
Torino in Ferndale, that new place?
I thought that's a bar. I thought that was a coffee bar.
It is, but they also have $9 margaritas, but they're damn good.
Damn.
I know. That's something I don't do very often.
So on one hand, see, you know, the forget about these guys. I mean, must be sincere about you know, it's hurting their business or something. But you could put forth, and libertarians do, that, that hey, if you don't like being there with all this smoke and, you know, mm-hmm. coming home and, you know, you're in a bar for... I tell that story when I was up...
Reek!
Where, what's the New Way Bar in Woodward?
Yeah, my friend Tina owns it.
Yeah.
Shout out to the New Way.
Yeah, and our friend Jim Edelman and Tom Dalton, those people in this band called Free Beer.
Yeah, and my band.
Yeah, your band there.
Yeah.
But you played on May 1st.
Right, when the smoking ban occurred, the
first day. But about 3 weeks before that, Jim and Tom's band, Free Beer, had played there. And I walked in there, I ordered a beer. The place was packed to the rafters.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is insane. I mean, I was like one of the few people not smoking.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty heavy smoking kind of bar, but she also has a big ventilation system, and it doesn't cut it.
So I went there about 11 o'clock. My wife didn't want to go. 11:20, I came home, and she's, what's the matter? And she's, oh, my God, you know, my clothing.
It was saturated.
Within 10 minutes, and I didn't finish my beer.
Right, I believe
it. I put it on the bar. I mean,
I
waved it. I hope they're not listening. They know they think I was BSing.
No.
So, great show, guys.
No, do you mean Tina?
No.
Oh.
Jim and Tom.
Oh, the band,
The band.
She's like, go ahead and talk about me. She doesn't care.
Yeah, well, that's good publicity for that. But I just, you know, I walked up real close. I'm thinking, I got to get out of here. And then, but I made, you know, they were playing, but I went up and I said, hey, you know, because they saw I was there. And then I just put my bottle down on the bar and got out of there.
Showed your face, yeah.
Yeah, in that rock and roll place.
They're a good band.
So, on the other hand, I don't know how many years have been kicked off of my life for being in these bars where these people have just been smoking. And at some level, this is an assault. And you could say, all right, well, I mean, you could turn it on me and say, so why are you staying in a place that you're being assaulted? Well, you want to hear the music. You want to
friends being social.
Yeah, right.
Lots of reasons.
I mean, and I say, as always in these matters, suicide, yes, if you want to kill yourself smoking. Murder, no. And there is a thing about state accommodations. And the state, you know, I know these baggers and these libertarians hate any kind of regulation, but there's all sorts of...
They hate regulation, except for a lot of them when it comes to regulating what's going on between my... legs and upward.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but I want to move on.
You know what I mean.
No, that's what's bothering me.
Like, what I do with my reproductive rights.
Oh, okay.
I said, and up a little further.
You're quite red.
I feel a little flushed.
Yes, all right. Anyway.
It could have been a hot flash.
All right, I got about a few minutes before our first break, but let's take Brent. He's out at Detroit Metro Airport. Brent, hi, you're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead, you're on the air with Peter and Jalene.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
We're doing
great.
I just wanted to touch on the subject you guys were talking about.
Medical marijuana?
Yeah, the medical marijuana.
Yeah.
It's really funny that they're raiding bars and stuff out there, raiding these places that are selling the pot. I mean, I know that I've gone to a head shop that's been in Ann Arbor for, I think, at least 15 years. And, they just keep moving locations every time they get hit. So it's not like they're going to keep trying to open up in the same spot. And I mean, this is a city, let's be honest, this is a city that has a annual celebration, they call Hash Bash.
Sure.
Know?
Right. And they have more lax laws.
Yeah, there's
when it comes
like
to
a,
it. You can have,
I mean, you get that dense of a college population anywhere, I think they're going to just kind of let things slide a little more when it comes to that. I mean, I've had friends in Ann Arbor who've gotten pulled over with and gotten tickets for possession with intent to sell, and they wound up just getting like a $280 fine or something for it. This was quite a few years ago, but...
Well, Brent, you say just, and that certainly is not any longer like felony possession laws like they used to have. But just think what that could conceivably do to someone's record for employment. All that stuff is online. And, yeah, so these...
And the jails are full of these ridiculous people with these ridiculous charges.
These horrible laws have ruined more lives, and it was all to protect us from ourselves so that we didn't become addicted to drugs or we didn't smoke marijuana all the time, because everybody knows, just how awful that is if you smoke marijuana all the time.
It is?
Yeah. Then I start listing all the lawyers, judges, cops.
Right.
Actually, I didn't know a lot of doctors. Never known a lot of doctors smoke weed. But particularly people in, within the judicial system.
I've known a few.
Yeah. I mean, I knew a guy. One time I was in this lawyer's office. He said, I gotta go downstairs and smoke a doobie. I said, I thought you had to write this brief. He said, oh, man, I couldn't even begin to write without
it? Oh, my. Oh, geez.
I go, well, you're not representing me.
Yeah.
All right, Brent, thank you. Appreciate your call. Hey, by the way, when we talked, and you mentioned that, about these Ann Arbor pot shops were raided. I mean, here, these things, these establishments were functioning in a manner that they thought was legal and was consistent with the law.
Yeah.
So it says they're raiding them, and I'm sure, I mean, listen.
They're just looking for a reason to go in there.
When police arrest somebody, they can't say, hey, look, I really feel badly about this, and this could be all, overturned in the future.
Yeah.
Just come on down. I mean, the police procedure is you're going to treat everybody the same. You're going to handcuff them.
Your ass is mine. Get in here.
Yeah,
right,
people that are trying to, give medicine to people, that's, they think, their deal. Suddenly they wind up in cuffs. They confiscated, this is interesting, in the Detroit News, they say confiscated pounds of medicine. They call it medicine, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they also took thousands of dollars and also stacks of patient files.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh?
What is that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, folks, let's talk some more. I'll just tell you in advance, Coleman and Ferndale is going to be on the air. Dylan wants to talk about medical marijuana.
Okay.
I want to hear this. Alan and Wyandotte wants to talk about the Washington Monument and the band, one of these proto-punk groups called the Dead Kennedys.
Oh, I remember the Dead Kennedys.
And what was the lead singer's name?
I know it.
I've interviewed him.
It's right here.
We'll get it. And Anna wants to talk about smoking in bars. All of that when we get back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
It's back to college. Time to learn about new things, like the fact that you can walk into a Walmart wireless center and walk out with a fully activated smartphone. Get the Sharp FX from AT&T, the HTC Wildfire S from T-Mobile, and the Samsung Continuum from Verizon. Just $28.88 each. Your new phone will work right away, which is more than we can say when you graduate with that art degree in glass blowing. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Prices with 2-year new agreement or qualified 2-year extension plan. Data plan required. Brand and assortment availability varies by location.
Right now, homes are more affordable than they've been in decades. And Quicken Loans has a mortgage program that will help you buy that perfect home. Call Quicken Loans right now. They can even introduce you to a local real estate agent that can guide you through the process step by step. With more than 25 years of helping American homeowners, Quicken Loans makes the process as easy as possible. With a streamlined approach and proactive updates, they provide you with the certainty you need to search for the home of your dreams. And highly trained Quicken Loans specialists are standing by, ready to help you take advantage of this incredible mortgage opportunity. So give Quicken Loans a call now. Call 888-249-1425. Find out how much home you can afford. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much and welcome back. We're talking a little about the right-wing teabagger response to the preparations for Hurricane Irene. Suddenly, how do these people politicize everything? They're just on about there was this big hype and that Barack Obama, you know, flew to the hurricane center to, you know, what was he supposed to do? Do like George Bush did?
Yeah.
Fly over the dam?
Yeah.
There's a lot of water down there.
Right. And not even, it was like a week later or something.
Yeah. And don't you think that everybody should have erred on the side of caution?
Absolutely.
You can be over-prepared. And nothing happens, you can be underprepared, and you, oh, I can't say that.
Yeah.
You're screwed.
SOL.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
All right. And we were asking, we got a couple of emails, but we'll get it right from, I think, somebody who probably, the name change here?
Huh. I don't know.
Okay. Oh, no, no. I see what's happening. All right. Anyway, Jalene and I were stuck completely on the name of the leader of the dead Kennedys.
And then we went, bam. Yeah. Jello Biafra.
Yeah. But we'll let Alan from Wyandotte tell us. Alan, hi. You're on the air.
I blew it.
Hey, Alan.
I just wanted to make a comment. You pointed out that the Washington Monument looks like the Klan's eye.
Yeah, you know what? Are you on a cell phone or something? Get in, kind of walk around or go somewhere.
I'm going towards the station. I'm on a wireless.
Okay, there you go.
But anyways, on the song by the Dead Kennedys, Stars and Stripes of Corruption,
yeah,
Jello Biafra makes the same comment. And the reason why I know this is 25 years ago, you did a show on the album Frankenchrist. And
oh, yeah.
I was listening, and I'm like, hey, I remember that, so I just had to call and say.
Wow, Alan, nice memory.
Yeah, you were smoking less than I was, man. I don't. Oh no, what am I saying? Are we on the air? I don't remember that.
I've been listening to you for as long as you've been on.
Wow, man, you must be in your 40s then.
Yeah, I'm getting close to 50.
Okay.
I don't like to admit it.
Why not?
But
hey, 50 is the new 30.
It is.
Yes, but I feel like I'm 30. So.
Yeah, you know what, Alan? I've just read somewhere that the first person to live to 150 is alive today. Yeah, really.
Well, I hope it's not me. I don't really.
Peter, you stop it.
No. It's me, and I'm going to be doing night call right up till then. All right, Alan. Thank you so much for calling 313-298-WRIF. Also, we've been talking about medical marijuana. Here's Dylan in Algonac. Dylan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
I just don't understand how they can let people put up these dispensaries and then send in teams to, you know, raid and close them down.
Yeah, don't you think it would have been a little more decent to say, hey, look, there was just this Michigan Supreme Court decision the other day that said you guys can't have these marijuana dispensaries anymore, and we need you to stop operation right now, and could you please come down to the police station if they wanted to file charges? But all of a sudden to take people that one day they're caregivers and helping people that are in most cases, overwhelmingly in the cases, really sick and need it, to becoming these criminals that are frog marched out of their shop in handcuffs. That sucks.
It's like they're committing a crime or something when all they're trying to do is really help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, some of them could very well be in it for the money, but
don't get me wrong.
Now, well, you know, that's not fair. I mean, you got to say what I'm saying isn't fair. Because what about doctors? I mean, when you become a doctor, you certainly anticipate making a lot of money. But mm-hmm. But also, most doctors I know are really committed to their
healing,
craft.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Dylan, thank you very much. Appropriate name to be talking about medical marijuana somehow. Yeah,
right.
I wonder, you know where Bob Dylan took his name from? Dylan Thomas, the English novelist and poet.
Right, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So then there was a generation of probably people are going, wow, man, like, what should we call our, and
there are a lot of Dylans. Pamela Anderson named, I think, her kid.
Yeah.
She and Tommy Lee's kid is Dylan, I think. Dylan Jagger, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And stoners, you know, they would even call the women in their life man.
Yeah, man.
Like, hey, man, what should we call our,
Well, it's like dude now. It's like, girls are dudes, guys are dudes.
That's right. All right, let's continue on. Here's Coleman in Ferndale. Hey, Coleman, you're on the air. Welcome.
What up, Doe?
Hey, Coleman.
Hey, man. First of all, let's just talk about the laws. I mean, I got popped the day I graduated high school. I walked down the aisle, and I didn't want to go to the school-sanctioned party, so I went to a friend's. It was going to be an awkward party, so I smoked beforehand. And I got caught in my truck, man. He rolled up on me because he's smoking the windows. I went through a lot of crap just for that. Just to think of for a little plant. Like, they need to be taking my money, my friend's money, and we would be on a Jamaican bobsled out of the recession. I swear.
There you go. Hey, Coleman, let me ask you this. How long ago was that?
Oh, when I was 18. So, what, 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what was the final judicial disposition?
Paraphernalia, so no weed charge because I smoked it all up, of course, and I just had to play it.
So has it ever interfered with, like, your ability to get a job or anything like that?
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, that's
good. I got delayed sentencing, so it was my first offense. So you can't even really see it. I guess they like, expunge it for you. But regardless, I mean, if they didn't give this horrible aura around it, like, people would just do it and then decide if they like it or not, decide if it helps them, and then, you know, go back to drinking their beer, you know?
But, you know, Coleman, it was the Ferndale police?
No, Livonia,
actually. Well, Livonia. Well, you know what? If you polled the Livonia police, I'm sure, and said, how many of you want to be busting people that are smoking marijuana, you'd be lucky if you'd get 10% of them, you know?
Right,
I mean, they know it's an incredible waste of their time, of
wouldn't
the
they rather
court
get
time.
People who are, like, beating women or robbing places? Or...
Yeah. And, you know, what all the drug laws have essentially, what they've done is to deliver clients for the prison industrial system, which takes billions and billions of dollars. I forgot, I just saw something. In fact, wasn't it in one of those articles, Jolene? I'll tell you, Coleman, it's something like it's $32,000 a year for every prisoner in the state of Michigan. And what do they spend on students? $4,000 or $6,000 or something like that. So that's insane. So someone as John Sinclair, the guru of marijuana from Michigan and Ann Arbor.
Mr. Amsterdam.
He said they, and I think one of you along the line said that. I mean, they're putting people in jail for smoking flowers.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, the other parts of it shouldn't be... I mean, take care of themselves. You can't, like, drive when you're intoxicated. I don't want people, I know a lot of people say, well, man, I can drive better when I'm stoned. I don't want them, so I certainly don't want, you know, airline pilots or train engineers.
If someone says that about alcohol, then I'm really freaked out.
Bus drivers, yeah.
Well, yeah.
All right, Coleman, stay out of trouble. Stay out of Livonia, yes. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Let's get Rob from Windsor on. Rob, thanks for making our show international. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? I'm a chemical dependency counselor and an addictions counselor, and I've listened to you for years. I have, off and on, but I'm not trying to be funny here, but you know, it's obvious that you favor the marijuana.
Kind of
like the tobacco, you know, tobacco companies.
Well, as a choice, you know. We experimented with it years ago. It was a success, and we've moved on.
We drink
adult beverages.
And that carried on for a few decades.
We now use the drug of despair, alcohol.
you made a comment about cigarettes. Actually, cigarettes are compared to heroin.
Yeah, they're the most. They're just as addictive.
But you said, well, it was more addictive than, a lot of stuff out there, which it isn't. But I'm not endorsing smoking tobacco.
Wait a minute, Rob. I want to let you make your point. But in terms of first-time use and addiction, cigarettes have overwhelmingly, in fact, it's almost 100%. For everybody that smokes smokes a cigarette, almost 100% of the people become addicted to it, where heroin has, you know, like 20% or 30%.
I don't know where you're getting your percentages for, but cigarettes, actually, you need to practice to really become addicted. Now, crack cocaine, many people get addicted on the first puff. That's it.
Okay.
We
don't want to be addicted or habituated to anything, right?
Okay, I deal with marijuana addicts on a regular basis, and the cognitive deficits. Now, we're not talking about a physically addictive substance here, but the cognitive deficits and the internal damage is definitely out there. You're talking about a comparison to, like, triserotonin reuptake blockers, what it does to the synapse. Chemically,
I understand. I hope others do.
Well, what are you saying? So what does weed do? It makes you depressed? Is that
what
you're saying?
Well, what people should do is, I'm glad
exercise,
there are...
Exercise, eat right.
Yeah,
like
Rob,
that.
I'm glad there's people like you around, because as I said, people should not develop dependencies on anything, any sort of substance whatsoever. I mean, we know that it's damaging, But, I mean, I hope you don't think that there should have been this 50-year war on drugs that spent near $1 trillion, and I could probably, I have no idea right now where to get any, buy any marijuana, but I'll bet you by an hour after I finish my show that I could probably get some, you know, some weed easy. Is that available? So all it's done is wrecked people's lives. The law has wrecked 10,000 times more lives than any damage the substance could do. Do you agree?
I know people that were convicted over there. I know people that were, since proximity is, you know, people going over to the States, now they've decriminalized it here. Now over here, if you have glaucoma, if you have cancer, stuff like that. Now these are legit cases.
Right.
Because the Canadian government actually produces it for those people, and they ship it to them. Now, we're not talking about those phony baloney things in California and Michigan where, geez, I got a hangnail, and my doctor writes me a script for marijuana. but it's a lot of baloney.
Well, it's not,
not all
again,
of it is.
How do you know what percentage is? I mean, listen, when you look in the Metro Times weekly newspaper,
my God,
and you have you realize there's clinics that are essentially staffed by doctors that if you go in there and you say, you know, I have unspecific back pain or something like that, and they're going to write you, they're going to sign off on you getting a card. Obviously, it's somebody that just wants to smoke marijuana for whatever, self-medicating or just for enjoyment or whatever. But we have no idea what the percentage of scams are, do we?
In the States, I think, I know California and Michigan, I don't know about Ohio, but I know California and Michigan have a high rate of, and it's like the methadone clinics that they've come up with here in Ontario. It's a methadone didn't work back in the 30s making super soldiers. It didn't work in the 60s and 70s getting the Vietnam vets off it. And it doesn't work today. There's treatment centers, and I suggest people go to treatment centers first for a 90-day program to get off the you know, Oxycontins, and I'm actually support liaison for reintegration and treatment of the combat that's coming back from Afghanistan.
Wow.
Well, that's good, and that's important, and that's a great community service, and this should be a mental health issue, physical health issue. But why law enforcement wants to stop people from having recreational use of intoxicating substances? I mean, you know the argument. I mean, given the harm that the legal, I don't know if you call it drug or whatever, but alcohol does to people, the deaths, the lost work hours, the broken homes, the violence particularly towards women and children, and on and on and on. And it doesn't work at all.
You agree we don't want to legalize any more substances because the two most legal substances are the largest killers in North America.
Well, listen, I'm completely for legalizing all drugs. If people want to use crack cocaine, that's fine. It's not fine with me, and I don't think it's a good idea. But you know what? I know lots of people. I shouldn't say lots of people. I know a couple of people that have done heroin, that have done crack cocaine, and they're not crack cocaine addicts, and they're not heroin addicts. On the other hand, I've known a few heroin addicts and
who overdosed.
who've overdosed, and I've known any number of alcoholics, including my father.
Mm-hmm.
Guy arrested.
Probably not a good thing, right?
No, that's bad. But you know what? I have usually one drink a day. And sometimes,
and you really do stop.
Yeah, I don't.
I can attest to that.
I don't even like the feeling of alcohol intoxication. So sometimes I'll have, like last night, I was over some friend's house and they had two mixed drinks. And I had,
Well, plus you're a lightweight, yeah. Peter.
Wait. Give me this. What is the bottom line here? I mean, should we protect people from themselves to the extent that we want to make them
police them,
to make criminals? I mean, as we know, this is the standard argument against marijuana prohibition or heroin prohibition, that it doesn't stop people, it criminalizes a population, and all it does is corrupt police and government officials and what have you. And people say, look at prohibition in the 1920s. Same damn thing has happened with marijuana prohibition, and not a lot of U.S. officials or police have been corrupted by that. Some. There have been some.
Some days.
But can we say Mexico, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is worse?
Or Bolivia, Colombia.
Yeah, all right. So do this, because we're actually spending a lot of time with you, because I think, like I say, I think you have an important point, and I think you're doing a great community service by helping people that don't want to be defended.
Because some people absolutely need what you do. So, I am with you.
So sum up.
I had my own situation and my own problems, and I probably, at one point, Peter, I probably smoked more dope than you did.
No, you never had. Nobody smoked more dope than me. I never. I was a lightweight in that, too.
I believe you.
But before we go any further, in fact, I've got to go in about 30 seconds. Sum up for me, Rob. Just tell me the bottom line. What should we do or not do?
I think people need to be responsible and accountable for their own actions. And
I agree.
I go to court for people when they turn their lives around, and I think people deserve a break. And I wish there are some cops out there that I just don't have any respect for because they're dirty.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, I mean, I never got to it, whether he thought it should remain illegal or not. I mean, but if
I think he's pretty much getting at that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we got to take another break. Anna, you're next. You've been hanging on a long time. She wants to talk about smoking in bars. And Lori just split. Jackie and Tim. Tim wants to talk about George Bush, one of our favorite subjects. And so now there's a couple open lines, and we'll get to those when we come back. And, can you imagine this? The businesses, corporations are mad at Barack Obama.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlower send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever, and the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief. Managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
One little fish oil pill. You know this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But the fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain the super antioxidant power of clinically proven krill oil that can increase joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days. Until now.
Introducing the free bottle giveaway of Krill Omega-3 from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Krill Omega-3 fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of our krill oil as part of a nationwide free trial. Just call 1-800-950-5868. To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free bottle is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-950-5868. Call now and claim your bottle absolutely free. 1-800-950-5868. That's 1-800-950-5868.
Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicap parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. The only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's housing discrimination hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Homeowners, how do you find the right contractor when you want something built? How do you find the best service professional when you need something fixed? For any type of service for your home, go to the most trusted website for pre-screened home pros. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource that instantly connects you with pre-screened remodelers, maids, repairmen, and many other home contractors. If you need a plumber, electrician, painter, or any other home pro, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the smartest way to find neighbor-rated contractors in your area. Over 10 million homeowners have trusted Service Magic for their home improvement and maintenance projects. So hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. I want to get back to our calls. There are some open lines. This is our second hour, and actually it will be our last show for a couple of weeks. We're not going to be here September 4th, which is next week because it's right before Labor Day, and then September 11th, we are going to take
taking
that,
it off.
Yeah, just in commemoration of that awful day. Let's see. Brian writes in from Windsor to call talkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I'm a medical marijuana patient with epilepsy, and I found out many years ago that pot definitely helped prevent seizures for me. The decision in Michigan is definitely a shame and a terrible situation to put many patients in. In roughly a year in Canada, we will be facing an unknown battle as the situation for licensing compassionate growers to help low-income patients will be up for renewal. And if that is taken away from us by the government, then the government will be the only provider, and many of us will not be able to afford their prices. And, of course, medical marijuana is not covered by health care. Thanks again for another great show. And the dead Kennedy's front man was Jello Biafra. General Biafra was a pretty incredible guy. He ran for mayor of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And part of his platform was that all politicians had to appear in public in clown suits.
They already do.
All right, let's get... one of the things we're talking about was that there was a decision by 500 bar and restaurant owners who were going to...
they're not allowing state lawmakers into their restaurants.
Right, that's right.
Or bars.
Yes. So Anna from Brownston has been waiting a very long time. Wants to talk about smoking bars. Anna, hi, you're on the air. My apologies for making you wait so long.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Okay, what's up? What do you think?
I think that I agree on what the bar decision is, because it is the business owner's decision whether or not to have smoking or non-smoking in their facilities.
Well, yes and no. If you think about it, there's all sorts of rules. First, you got to be 21. You know that there is a provision that's that determines how dim the lighting can be in bars, and that you couldn't say refuse to serve women, or you couldn't say I refuse to serve an ethnic or racial group or something
gay
like
people,
that.
Gay people, right?
Gay people, yeah. So there's tons of rules about bars. You know what can happen in there.
Right.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, these, in fact, there's a group here. I don't know. All of a sudden I've lost. I have this big pile of stuff. Oh, here is the name of the group. The group is Protect Private Property Rights in Michigan. That's the name of the group. So they're agreeing with you. They're saying it's our private property, and if people want to come in there and smoke. And, you know, there's something, Anna, about that something like 40% of the drinkers consume about 80% of the booze, and great many of them like to sit in bars and smoke. So I don't know.
I think there's some bars that are kind of bending.
Oh, yeah. There are. And in fact, there is some enforcement. And that seems kind of crazy in a way.
I've just heard. Well. I just don't do the bar scene anymore.
And, don't you know, get around much.
Yeah, anymore. I'm over it.
All right, Anna, thank you for being so patient. Appreciate you calling 313-298-WRIF. And, here is Jackie in Ferndale, who has been waiting forever and got disconnected, and she's back. Go ahead, Jackie. You're on the air.
Hi, you guys. It's my second time talking to you guys. I love you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Jackie.
Not tonight.
And I just want to say that I'm a card holder, and I want to mention one thing that I heard that the Ann Arbor raids, I heard that those were planned in order to make an example and scare everybody else.
Well, I mean, the raids on the compassionate care marijuana dispensaries. Well, somewhere or other I saw, I should keep these stories in some order, but they said that those have been planned for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also heard that there might have been, you know, because some of these people, they're not on the up and up, some of these dispensaries, you know, they're making it bad for everybody else by doing illegal activities, having too much stock or whatever. And, but I do want to say that a lot of them are back open. Now, I went to one today.
Yeah.
They are now running as a nonprofit. They're, got their, employees on payroll where they, you know, they can say like, look at, you know, we're providing jobs for the community, you know, have people on payroll, paying taxes. And I just want to say that one time there was a gentleman in there, and he was in his 60s, and I said, oh, I heard about a lot of seniors getting their cards. Well, he said he had cancer, and he was wasting away. He had no appetite, and so he got a medical marijuana card. Now, the first time, he had not smoked since he was a teenager, and he was 65. He smoked a whole joint.
Do you smoke it? How do you know? Excuse me for being, like, totally naive, but do you smoke there, or do you just buy it and go back to your place?
You just buy it there.
Yeah. Don't you have to lock it in your trunk or something?
Yeah, you keep it in your trunk.
Yeah.
You don't want to transport it, you know. And always make sure that you have your paperwork with you no matter what. Always have your paperwork with you, for sure.
Yeah, things have come a long way. Last year, the American Civil Liberties Union sued the Royal Oak Police, demanding that they return this marijuana to a patient who had been confiscated from it. That's pretty weird. All right, Jackie, thanks for being so persistent. Appreciate it. I'm glad to get you on the air. Thanks a lot. Yeah, let me see here. LawNet, whatever the hell that is, executed a search warrant at the Liberty Clinic and MedMar A2 Compassionate Healthcare, which is our marijuana dispensaries in Ann Arbor, where three men were arrested. They were processed and released pending the prosecutor's authorization of charges. But the Michigan State Police Lieutenant Jerry Cooley said these are two separate investigations that have been going on for weeks. Oh, this is what LawNet is. The Livingston and Washington Narcotics Enforcement Team. It has to do with the activities going on there. Why don't they just disband this and spend their time looking after real crime? I don't think the individual officers involved have any say in it whatsoever.
Right.
But it sure is a waste of police time. All right, on to one of our favorite subjects. Here's Tim in Bastoria. He wants to talk about George W. Bush. Hey, Tim. You're on the air.
Yeah, I would totally back Vermont on it.
Oh, well, let's tell people what we're talking about.
What it is, yeah.
Well, hold on. You should pop up Mr. Crowley first. Throw that up in the background music just for novelty's sake.
Okay. Anyway.
But wait. Let's remind people what we were talking about.
Yeah, in Vermont, there's some towns that...
Two Vermont towns.
They say that if Bush or Cheney comes into their town, they've ordered them arrested for war crimes.
Yeah, Brattleboro and Marlboro. And Brattleboro has just been swamped, inundated with floodwaters, which some say may be the work of God to punish these people. Isn't it always? But go ahead. So what's your take on it?
I totally agree with the whole idea, just the exception of how are you going to put Halliburton and the almighty Bush behind bars.
Well, exactly.
One is Dick Cheney's former corporation, which
he's
still
KBR.
Gets...
Right,
isn't that
right,
what it's
right.
called now, KBR?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember, yeah. But in any event...
That's the only downside of the situation is how... And let's say, per se, they did. Say it did happen.
Uh-huh.
Would you see Jeb jumping in to the race next year?
The brother. Well, I don't know. The field may be wide open because they have such a bunch of screwballs running on the Republican ticket. My God.
I don't think we're going to get a Republican, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things. I mean, Obama's become increasingly unpopular. He was always unpopular with the crazed right wing. But I think people on the left, even in the center, are pretty disappointed by what he's done so far. But, you know, what'll happen, and I'll probably succumb to this, they'll say, okay, who do you want to be president? Rick Perry? You know, this, never mind, don't even get me started. Or George Bush? I go, well, that's an easy one. All right. Where's Bastoria?
Bastoria? It's about 12 miles north of Lapeer.
Okay.
Really?
Is it with a B or a P?
Huh?
Is it a Bob or Peter? Which letter is the first letter?
It's a Fostoria.
Oh, Fostoria. Okay.
Okay. What's the name?
I actually thought this was where Def Leppard was going to record their live album because it sounded right.
Yeah, right.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling from Fostoria. Suddenly, everybody wants to talk about George Bush. What could possibly
Why
be
not?
Up with this?
Here's Patrick. We haven't had for a while.
Here's
Peter.
Patrick from Sterling Heights. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. How you doing tonight?
We're excellent.
Okay. What reason why I wanted to talk a little bit about the Bush situation is because the new book, I'm not going to promote this, but Mr. Cheney.
Oh, yeah.
Cheney.
His memoirs.
He has a book out. He wants to put a book out. Now, he said he's going to have heads rolling if you read any of the newspapers over the weekend.
Right.
Going to have people's heads rolling over this book. Now, as soon as I seen that over the weekend, and then yesterday I seen on TV George Bush, he was very downed about all the people dying 9/11's, the towers coming down in 9/11. Now, wait a second here. Now, that popped a little thing in my head and says to myself, he's talking about 9/11 and he's all sad about the people dying in 9/11, and then at the same time, Cheney's going to have a book out about 9/11, and there's chapters in the book, according to what it said in the paper, that he's going to have people's heads rolling in D.C.
Yeah, he's just criticizing everybody. Yeah, he Darth Vader, they call him. He wanted to just bomb everybody, bomb every country. In fact, at one point, he wanted to bomb Syria and George Bush at this cabinet meeting, apparently. In fact, this is in Cheney's book. He said, does anybody else here agree with the vice president? And not a single hand came
wow.
up. Yeah. Now, this guy is, Mr. Torture, Mr.
Evil.
Destroy the Constitution, Mr. Warmonger. And in fact, here, former Secretary of State Colin Powell on Sunday dismissed as cheap shots the criticism leveled at him and others in Vice President Dick Cheney's memoir. And also, there's sort of a rehabilitation going on of George W. Bush, because he just looks like kind of a sad, aging guy.
He's just been away. He's been laying somewhat low, even though he's done a couple of cocky, idiotic interviews.
Yeah, and what something or other that now that's coming out, what he was thinking when he
9/11.
Was, when he was reading that book to these kids and didn't respond. And, now they've
the
had,
goat book?
The goat book. They've had time to kind of regroup. I can't even remember all of it, to tell you the truth. All right, Patrick, thank you very much. I get your point. Appreciate it. And yet another call. Here's Adam from Detroit talking about George W. Bush. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's good. What's up?
Hey, not much. I just wanted to let you guys know I listen to you guys pretty often, like the show. I don't always agree with what you guys have to say, but I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. The thing with Bush, like my opinion about that, when we decided to go to war, I think what a lot of people tend to forget is, even Hillary Clinton herself actually voted
for it.
For us to go. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, a guy named Barack Obama did as well.
Yeah, most of them did because they were snowed.
Well, yeah, big time.
Wait. I disagree with that. They weren't snowed. They knew it was BS.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that some of them are such sheeple.
Well, I think people that are as smart as Barack Obama and as smart as Hillary Clinton were pure opportunists. That they knew that they, how did they know? They thought that probably it would be just a quick rollover and
Let's just go in there and get out, right?
Well,
get the job done.
Wouldn't cost us almost 5,000 dead and 150,000 Americans wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis,
trillions of
dead,
dollars,
literally trillions of dollars, and now you have a situation where the prime minister of Iraq, Maliki, is backing the Syrian government's repression of the protester at the behest of the Iranian government. So that's what all this has been about. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's all right.
And yeah.
I think a lot of it had to do with that. That's what the majority of the voting population wanted at the time, too. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Well, up for the longest time, good numbers of the American people, maybe even a majority, thought that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11.
I felt like you and I were the only two people who had a clear head about this.
Well, I know exactly where I was on February 18th, 2003. Myself and my wife and about literally 1 million other people were in an anti-war demonstration in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And there were similar demonstrations all around the country. Most people that really looked at the situation of the run-up to the war in Iraq knew that Bush and Cheney were just lying, and Colin Powell was lying. He said, it's a cheap shot at him. Too effing bad. These guys have so much blood on their hands. That's one of the things that has sunk our economy. And
I don't know how they live with themselves, Peter.
I know. And now they're thinking, well, George Bush, he was, when I heard that news, I was, screw you, man. God damn. I hate those people. Thank you very much. In fact, as our friend Mike Malloy says, have I told you tonight how much I hate these people? Except
but he says it with much more contempt.
Some contempt and venom and everything under the sun. And in terms of sinking the economy, there is this guy that one of the most horrible, I don't know what kind of person he is. Actually, he told me F you at this at this event that he and I were speaking at, Nolan Finley, who is this far right wing columnist for the Detroit News.
Yeah, he's something else. I don't know how I missed him, but I never have read his stuff until you pointed him out to me. Awful.
I just read this. Obama can't get a grip on the economy. Well, he can't. Nobody can. And he says that the whole problem with the reason that our economy has sunk, you know why it is? Because of Obama's attempt to regulate industry.
Yeah, really?
Because you know, right, the recession started on January 20th, 2009. Oh, no, it's right. It started before that. And so Nolan Finley, this moron for the Detroit, writing for the Detroit News, doesn't want regulations, wants to roll back regulations on business. And does he mention anything like the Bush tax cuts to the wealthy? No.
Right.
That would have provided a little bit of income. Does he mention the trillions of dollars that have been spent on these two unnecessary wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that Bush and Cheney got us into? No, it's all because there's too many regulations, right?
Yeah, talk about a blanket statement.
And here is the deal, too. I mean, could these people really believe it? I mean, I actually almost think they're bereft of any authentic belief system. That so there's been tax cuts, right? And we went through this period where business was deregulated, and that's what another thing that sunk the economy. They deregulated the financial markets for all practical purposes. And this is what we wound up. What we wound up with is what we're looking at now. I mean, and did these people learn? Listen, I'm almost, I stress almost, turning it over to these right-wingers and these teabaggers and all and say, hey, have at it. Let's see what you do.
Yeah, what's your plan?
Yeah, and as we found out last week, they have plan zero.
Zero.
They just want the power so they can get their rich buddies more money. A lot of them aren't even, and that's what I can't understand, that there is actually working class people and middle class people that will go for this insanity.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They've been snowed as well by the media.
It's got to be something beyond, I mean, why would people consciously vote against their own interests and for the interests of people that are trying to turn them into peasants?
Yeah, who don't care one bit about them.
Some open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Jeff in Ann Arbor, where some of these medical marijuana establishments have been raided. Go ahead, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking the call. Before I do, a quick comment on the Colin Powell interview. I saw that in its entirety, and he's really a class act. I mean, he really discredited Cheney, who's just going around with a smirk about how heads are going to explode with this book. And, you know, he just reiterates what a crony capitalist he really is, you know.
But on the other hand, I mean, Colin Powell disgraced himself with that speech before the UN, which was just so false on the face of it.
But he acknowledged, he just presented material that was in front of him, as he should as a Secretary of State. But he's, you know, too, was against so much of that. And he went on about how it just was a no teamwork, and it was just this really dysfunctional, you know, White House. So, I mean, he got out of there as quick as he could. But, I mean, he really just did what he had to do.
Well, I don't know. He was just following orders, and, you know, that doesn't usually hold up too well. I mean, he could have sunk the Bush-Cheney plans to invade and occupy Iraq. He could have just said, this is all a lie. I'm a general. I'm a war hero from the first Gulf War, and this is not true. And in many ways, I mean, you know, like Bush and Cheney, it's just insane. And Colin Powell isn't. In fact, if it wasn't for this blemish on his record, I would almost say he's an admirable man. But I think he disgraced himself, and his disgrace continues.
Yeah, true. Well, he's gone out quietly, I give him that. But, again, in a classy way, he definitely discredited what was said about him in the book and just the overall impression of that book. But, yeah, I was living out in California when that whole law changed, by the way, on the medical marijuana. And I just saw all the popping up of these clinics, and, you know, it was almost hard to believe what a free-for-all it became with just pop almost legalized, it felt like.
Yeah.
And then moving back here to Michigan, I thought, you know, back to some reality or sanity, but it was the same thing, if not more. And I think until a federally legalized laws change, like under a Ron Paul administration. You know, there's just too much abuse of these ordinances with these clinics, these nonprofits. I mean, you know, like the caller from the Windsor said, or in Canada, it's just there is a place for a rigorous system that gets the patients with true glaucoma, cancer, just, you know, but here it's just run amok. I mean, you have to agree until there's a fully legalized system.
Yeah, and then it's just kind of coming in the back door. I agree. All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling in. 313-298-WRIF. Hey, by the way, I didn't even tell people about this, that at 1 a.m., a couple of interesting interviews. First, let me see. Which are we going to do? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we'll do this one. This is Edward Jiraday, who's written a book called Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through Three Decades of War in Afghanistan. It sounds like sounds sort of stiff, doesn't it? It's actually a very exciting interview.
It's not these titles that they write. Yeah. You know, they are very dry. They need to sexify them a little.
Well,
not much sexy about war.
Well, he should have put this in the subtitle.
Osama threatened to kill me.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. He says, and this was in 1989. And so he said he met this tall Arab among these Afghans. And this guy says to him, "If I ever see you again, I will kill you." And it was Osama bin Laden.
And he didn't.
Then he sees him again.
Oh,
so I
can't wait to hear it.
Then also Jay Feldman wrote "Manufacturing Hysteria: History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America." And in times like this, war, economic downturn, civil liberties and rights are often, you know.
Yeah, out the window.
Out the window, as we saw. With the run-up to the Iraq war. And, in fact, if you want to go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, there are some articles about Darth Vader, who is Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney. Hey, Lyndon wrote in, Obama says Obama did not vote for the war in Iraq because he was not elected to the Senate until 2005. He was against the war in Iraq. That was the main difference between him and Hillary in the Democratic primary, and that's why he beat her. So.
Okay, let's look that one up. I would stand corrected if it is. So Vermont towns voted to arrest Bush and Cheney just over the last few days because of their violation of the Constitution. And, boy, I mean, Cheney does not look good.
He doesn't look good. Vermont's kind of a fun little state.
Yeah, and let me see. I did not write this. So
yeah, why does he look so terrible?
Well, you know, he's had a lot of heart problems. So it says, torturer, warmonger, and war criminal Dick Cheney rewrites history, still celebrated by, quote, polite society. Okay, let's go back to our telephones. Where are we? Okay, pardon me.
Who do we have?
Thank you. We have Nick in Pinckney. Hey, Nick.
Nick in Pinckney.
You're on the air.
Yo, what's going on, man?
How you doing?
I'm well.
Good.
I work at a medical marijuana dispensary, man.
And, really?
The past couple of days have been pretty stressful for us. We stayed open. We don't believe that we're in any danger from the law and that.
How come?
Well, we're located in Ypsilanti, and what we did was a year ago when the owner decided to do what he was going to do, he went down to City Hall, and he told them, and he asked them, and he said, hey, what do I have to do to get this legal and to get, you know, to make sure that I don't have to worry about anybody coming up in my business? And they got their stuff together, and they wrote us up a license, man, from the city. And we hang it on the wall. And we basically have him, you know, like right when everyone walks in, they can see our city permit, which is Ypsilanti. The four dispensaries in Ypsilanti have been up and operating ever since Wednesday. They feel safe because of the city support. The people in Ann Arbor that got raided the other day, like they said, it had nothing to do with the ruling that was made from the three-judge panel up in, Isabella County.
Right.
It's been stressful the past couple of days going into work, looking out the window.
Well, I can imagine. That's ridiculous, the fact that they arrested people that were just working there in something that they thought was a legal facility.
Yeah, well, the thing is this, they were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. But they don't have their license from the city yet. So they don't know what is right or what is wrong because the city hasn't owned the law. And the state was pretty much left it up to the cities and the counties or the township or whatever district you're from to decide what was right and wrong in the zoning and the permitting and everything involved. So it's up to all these cities in Michigan to decide what's right and what's wrong. Because if you want to start a compassion club or a nonprofit, which we're a nonprofit, we have a license from the state. We walked down to City Hall the other day when they made the ruling after the raids. We were scared. We shut down on Thursday.
I can imagine. Well, I think one caller said that until it gets sorted out on some centralized basis. And one of the things that the Justice Department has said is, hey, this is still all illegal under federal law. And they said they're going to keep enforcing federal law, and you can't have state law preempting federal law.
This has been a problem for a long time.
Yeah. And at some level, we don't like that. We say, hey, wait a minute. Our state did this. Why in the world can the federal government tell us what to do? But, think about some of the, some state could say, hey, we're going to have a minimum wage of $2 an hour.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So there are problems. On one hand, nobody likes to be told what to do from outside of their locality or a city. Well, what about a city? We could say,
Wasn't Royal Oak trying to do something? They were trying to strike it down. I can't remember.
They were. Yeah, they're not happy with it.
No.
All right, Nick, good luck on it, and hope you stay out of trouble. 313-298-WRIF. Let's do this. Carrie, Dan, others, stay on the line. 313-298. Well, here, Mr. Announcer will tell you. We'll be right back to get your call.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech, 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. This is our last segment till September 18th. We're going to miss next Sunday, the 4th. And September 11th, the commemorative day, the Sunday after that. So if you'd like to get in on it all, 313-298-WRIF.
It's your last 25 minutes. And we want you to follow us on Facebook, and we will definitely keep in touch with you that way in the next few weeks.
Sure. I shouldn't even give this. I'm not going to give him the kind of publicity he likes. This is from Rick in East Point. He knows what I'm talking about. The government didn't. This is back to. This is a different aspect of this Hurricane Irene, who turned out not to be anywhere near severe as they thought. The right wingers and the teabaggers are saying it's just a big hype, you know. So I don't understand what their criticism is. What do they think?
Would they rather have it be? They'd rather blame Obama for something. You know,
yeah. He's doing a hands-on thing, so he's just trying to get publicity.
Yeah, if you know, he's got to save his ass.
Yeah, if he would have stayed on in Martha's Vineyard, he would have been vacationing while.
Too much vacation.
And what if one of their favorites, the governor of New Jersey, Christie, he was. He had mandatory evacuations, and they're always about, you know, the federal government this, federal government that. Well, the federal government is going to pay billions of dollars to the state of New Jersey and other states as well. I mean, if he's a good conservative, he won't take it. Anyway, Rick.
Yeah, let's see that.
Rick in East Point says the government didn't force you to build your house near a river or on the beach. Government agencies like FEMA allow Americans to avoid risk by enabling them to build where private insurance companies would refuse to insure them, then force other responsibilities to pay for their stupidity. They don't have private flood insurance. They don't get any. FEMA doesn't pay insurance. I mean, they
maybe give you a trailer for a while.
That's nice.
That has asbestos and things.
But people, I mean, often wonder why people build on these floodplains. Oftentimes in other countries around the world, this is where the poor are forced
to live.
That's
where they live, right?
But I remember where all those floods up in North Dakota, and these people had said there hadn't been a flood there in 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, well, I mean, there's so much climate change going on. That's another thing.
Well, and there's the whole other thing about fracking that's going, and that people are blaming part of this on fracking.
They are?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The earthquakes?
Yes, and all of it, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I
mostly
hadn't heard
the earthquakes,
that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there had been these series of earthquakes, and I didn't even put that all together.
Yeah.
The series of earthquakes in Arkansas over the last year where they think fracking is where they drill down and push water and chemicals into the rocks that then are supposed to get natural gas out of it. And there's people that are saying this is horrible. It's going to contaminate groundwater and all
yes.
that. And if you read any of these ads, they say, oh, it's perfectly safe and, nothing's going to happen.
I don't think so.
I can't even remember what in the hell I was looking for in all of this. Oh, yeah, I know. Seeing Irene as harbinger of a change in climate. The scale of Hurricane Irene, this article says, which could cause more extensive damage along the eastern seaboard than any storm in decades. So this is all these right-wingers are downplaying this storm, but this is true. I mean, it's cost tens of billions of dollars of damage. A hurricane's getting worse because of human-induced climate change. The short answer from scientists is that they're still trying to figure it out, but many of them do believe that hurricanes will get more intense as the planet warms because it's going over warm water, and they see large hurricanes like Irene as a harbinger, something announcing something coming. While the numbers of the most intense storms has clearly risen since the 1970s, researchers have come to differing conclusions about whether that increase can be attributed to human activities. Most scientists, climate scientists, climatologists think yes, like Carrie Emanuel of MIT says, on a long time scale, I think, but not all of my colleagues agree, that the evidence for a connection between Atlantic hurricanes and global climate change is fairly compelling. And one of the things we've always said on this show before, all right, well, this is like preparing for the hurricane. Why don't we err on the side of caution?
Right.
Like, we don't know whether or not that the climate change is caused by human-induced global warming.
Nobody some did. Of the world's greatest scientists
theory. This is they theorize. I mean, you actually it's nothing you could prove 100%, but it is the overwhelming consensus of the world's climatologists that global warming has become by, fossil fuels being burned and the gases being trapped.
Good old humanity, huh?
all, for some reason or other, again, this is so bizarre, all the right-wingers, all the teabaggers say, this is crazy, you know, this is not...
Made up.
They all deny it. Why? I don't know. I have no idea.
You know what I also don't get about that, Peter, is that, you know, these right-wingers will say that when it's freezing cold or something like that. Well, you know, what's going on? Global warming much? Then there's these earthquakes going on all over the place. There were more. There was California. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I heard Quebec yesterday. This is what I heard. Anyway, why don't they come out and say that during these times, too?
I don't think they make a bit of sense. I think this is all just sort of this mass psychology of madness. I mean, it's sort of like lemmings in a way. You know, they're just in this group that's just going to run over a cliff, which is okay. They could go. It wouldn't bother me real badly. But they have the capacity to take the rest of us with them. But, you know, it's... about erring on the side of caution. All right. So what we could do, we would get off fossil fuels, make this incredible effort, which would create jobs and all this, you know, green economy. And then we'll say we did all this. And we went, well, damn, there's still climate change. So I guess it was wrong. It wasn't human induced after all. But guess what we have? A clean planet. We're not poisoning people. There's another aspect to this besides global warming. It's what is being thrown into the air by burning fossil fuels and, you know, particularly oil and coal.
Wait, coal's clean, right, Peter? Now, that's what they tell us on those commercials.
I like, too, after all, you know, this earthquake came. And remember, I was talking about last week about this PayPal founder, Peter Thiel, who's given $1.25 million to create this floating libertarian country in international waters on these, like, oil rigs. And one of the things they want to get away from is looser building codes. Building codes.
Yeah, so
I don't get
sure
it.
The buildings collapse or the fire regulations. Man, let's not have any of those.
These people are truly insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get some more calls. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Carrie. Carrie's in Southfield. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hey, Carrie.
Oh, wait.
Did I not do it? Sorry.
I tried. It's
wasn't
all right.
My fault.
It's late in the show.
Carrie, you're on the air. Sorry. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Doing good. What's up?
Well, I was listening to you on the way home from work.
Yeah.
And I heard that you were talking about how our economy's, you know, kind of in the toilet.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
It may be getting worse.
Yeah, it is. It's getting worse every day. And I hear a lot of people who have opinions, and I'm one of them that does have an opinion. I saw that this was starting to turn downward back in the early 90s when they signed into law the NAFTA North American Free Trade Agreement.
That's one
of them. I personally feel that by opening that free trade up, which – for them, they thought it was a good idea, helping other countries bring their goods to us. It opened up a loophole for businesses here, guys that run this country, to take their companies out into other countries and then bring the products back here and say, oh, by the way, you still have to pay the same price, but we're making
more money.
Right.
Yeah, well, Gary, I mean, you're right, except it was never done with any altruism. It was done, essentially, this was pushed by the Republicans. In fact, the majority of Republicans voted for it, for NAFTA, and the majority of Democrats voted against it, and Bill Clinton, it got a majority of votes in the Senate and in the House. And Bill Clinton, for some inexplicable reason, other than the fact that he is a corporatist, signed it. And now Barack Obama.
He was a good Republican too.
Republican light. And now Barack Obama has signed, if that's been signed into law yet, the Central American Free Trade Act and also this free trade agreement with South Korea. And I would say anytime any politician or corporate head or anybody puts free in front of anything, you know that the middle class person is going to get screwed.
Well, we definitely can feel it every day. I mean, my wife and I, we're both on disability.
Yeah.
I do work part-time. I won't say where.
Okay.
I do work part-time. And we're still struggling. And the other problem that this country has is the mortgage companies and bank lenders and everything, they don't want to help the people. They keep hurting everybody. And, you know, it's tough as it is. I mean, $4 a gallon for gas. I mean, I have to drive 18, 20 miles just to get into work. Wow. $4 a gas, that's one trip, one way and back home. And that's
Think about this, and I always make this point. Why are some of you said about struggling? Why are so many people in the richest country in the world struggling? I mean, why is this happening? Why are 45 million people now here? USA, here's an article from Reuters. USA becomes food stamp nation. So now we have 45 million people that are receiving food stamps, roughly 15% of the population, increase of 74% since 2007. And they give the example of Jenna Sucedo, who's a she supervises cashiers at a Walmart in Rico Rivera, California, but her wages aren't enough to feed herself and her 12-year-old son.
Oh, my God.
She makes $9.70 an hour, but she only works 26 hours a week. She lives with her mother, and she doesn't get benefits from Walmart. Here are these five Walmart heirs that are all worth billions and billions of dollars, and they won't pay people a living wage. Actually, Carrie, let me say thank you for calling. I got more to say and answer, but you can listen to it off the air. I appreciate it, and thanks for calling in. This from Charles M. Blow in Reading in Saturday's New York Times, Failing Forward. According to a report issued this week by Guttmacher Institute, the unintended pregnancy rate has jumped 50% since 1994. Is this the one I was looking for? It's just talking about the impact on young children. 49% of all children born in this country are born to families who receive food supplements from the Federal Women, Infants, and Children Assistance Program. The World Bank points out undernutrition in young children has been linked to delayed growth and motor development, lower IQs, behavioral problems, and decreased attention, deficit learning, and lower educational achievement. So this is what we're going to be creating in this country, a generation of people like that. And Charles Blow says, we simply can't keep turning to pills and prisons to solve problems of poverty and poor parenting. This is unhealthy, unsustainable, and unwise. The question is, though, why do we have poor people in this country if we're the richest country in the world? It's not like it's this big reward. Pardon me. And if you do...
Sorry, there's a mosquito in here.
Is that what keeps going on over there?
Yes.
Wow, it's after you, too.
They don't even like me outside, but in here, they're this after little you. Sucker wants me.
Yeah. But the point being is that it's about how is the wealth this country has distributed. And part of it is what kind of wages do we pay people? And if we pay a hardworking woman under $10 an hour who has a child and has to face everything from, as Carrie was saying, high gas prices and what have you. And food prices, they're
rising
somewhere. I would have done well if I would have... A report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation last week found that the official child poverty rate, which is a conservative measure of economic hardship, increased 18% between 2000 and 2009, the Bush regime.
Thanks, Bush.
Yeah. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, the number of children facing food insecurity in 2009 soared to nearly 1 in 4. So 25% of the kids.
Yeah. Look who suffers.
Yeah.
And these guys don't even give one hoot about it.
Yeah.
Cheney, Bush, they don't care about these children.
No. And
not at all.
And somewhere or other in here, they're talking about the more and more restrictions on abortion that these right-wingers are pushing. He said, actions have consequences. If you didn't want a child, you shouldn't have sex. This is what these right-wingers say. You must be punished by becoming a parent, even if you know that you are not willing or even able to be one.
Yeah, and who are they to tell anyone what to do with their bodies?
Yeah.
Disgusting.
This is insane, he says. And even if you do follow a primitive religious concept of punishment for sex, as many on their right seem to do, you must at some point acknowledge that it is the child, not the parent, who will be punished most by our current policies that increasingly advocate for, quote, unborn children, but fall silent for those outside the womb. This is not how a rational society operates.
Yes.
Okay. Just a little bit of time left. We can probably get you in 313-298-WRIF. Here is Daryl in Romulus. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I kind of agree with a little bit of what you're saying. A few weeks ago, you were talking about the budget, how they fight over the budget.
Right.
I came up with a great game plan. Let's fire all of them. Let's put all of this working class people up there.
I mean, you don't want to have our lives run by millionaires? What's the matter with you, Daryl?
Get rid of all those rich people. Knock them all out. Get rid of all. Because they've been up there for years and years and years.
Yeah. Yeah,
nice and cushy with that health care that they receive. And
But, you know, Daryl, here's one of the problems. People always say, like, kick out all the incumbents. So you kick out all the Democrats and replace them with Republicans, and you kick out all the Republicans and replace them with Democrats. So you're kind of back where you started.
The chance the baggers could get into
it. If there was any sense of really wanting a democratic society, they would completely, not so much kick out the current crop, although I wouldn't mind it for most of them, but kick big money out of the legislative process and the electoral process. And that is to say that they would allow, for instance, about a 3-week campaign rather than a year and a half campaign. And that would mean like they do in Britain. So they'd have some public debates that would be shown on television. And so, you know, the parties would have individual conventions, no primary, all that crap and all that. And you could have, say, then Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney. You'd have like 4, 5, or 6, debates that are, publicized. Take another day off, have Tuesday voting day be a holiday, and people would vote. And there'd be no allowance for this $1 billion that these candidates are going to raise from corporations and unions in order to put across, quote, their message, which essentially is nothing but manipulating us into voting for their brand. You know, they talk in those terms.
Because they are a corporation, basically.
Yes. All right, Daryl, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is Paul. Paul, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, where are you calling from, Paul?
Sterling Heights.
Oh, go ahead. You're on
you
the air.
Know me. Anyhow.
You're Sterling Heights. No, didn't say it on the screen. It doesn't show up on my end. Sarah and Athena put it up there, and it doesn't make it here. But I don't know. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Are the billionaires okay? I just need to tell me, please.
Are they okay? Are the billionaires okay?
Are they?
Let me think about it. Yeah.
Maybe we could take that old Who song, the kids are all right, and turn it into the billionaires are all right. Yeah.
Short and sweet, there's this Old Testament story about the wisdom of King Solomon. Two women claim that an infant is theirs, and King Solomon is in his window, in his wisdom, draws out his sword and says he'll cut the baby in two and give each mother one half of the child. One mother does not object, and the other mother screams, just give the baby to the other mother. And, you know, the evangelicals really remind me of the mother that would have the baby cut in half.
Really?
Did you say the evangelicals?
Yes, evangelicals.
Evangelicals.
I love it.
I like that.
All right. Good night.
That's a new one. We've got a new one.
Good night. So we're going to, you know, I want to do something because can you talk for a while?
Oh, well, you know what? The show just about over.
Because I want to look up.
What are you looking
up
here?
When did Barack Obama get in this? Because we were saying that he voted for, this is hard to find. He was following.
I don't know.
For a seat, he ran for United States Senate in 2004. Okay, so then he would have become a senator.
2005.
So that guy was right.
Lyndon.
Who wrote it? But I guess what it was, he voted for all the appropriations.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because the war had already begun in 2003. All right, we have one of our special friends as our last caller. I think it's Maurice from Detroit. Maurice, how you doing?
Hello, Peter Jelaine.
How you doing?
One thing to say.
Yeah.
I don't think the taxpayer should have to pay for a kid or an unwed person to have kids. That's why we messed up right now, 30, 40 years of paying out money on welfare aid for people having sex, can't take care of their own screw up.
What do you think should happen? Well, then he got kids. What about the kids? That's what I'm saying. He's going to wind up punishing the kids.
It's their problem. problem. They should have thought about that before they had them. Some people live off the money they have on the kid because they're too lazy and too ignorant to get a job.
Maurice!
12 hours a day, and I don't sit on my ass. I go out here and work. They could do it, too. If they can't take care of the kids, that they can become wards of the state.
Hey, well, Maurice.
Wards of the state, yeah.
Maurice, do you have any kids?
No, I don't have any kids, but the thing about it is I still had to take care of my nephews and my nieces, one of my sisters and brothers. It's so funny.
All right, we're going to leave it
at that. Oh, you take care of them, so you kind of, nice. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's good.
With that intemperate remark, we're going to let it go. Well, I'll tell you, if someone told you, dear listeners, that you were going to get essentially your week off. He said, oh, yeah, a week off with pay. You'd say, damn, this is great. And
yeah.
Julian and I, we broadcast only once a week for this particular
show. For this show, yeah.
But yeah, we prepare for this all week. And
yeah.
So, but we're not happy. I mean, I'm not, we're
with
not going to broadcast.
Oh, for the next couple of
next
weeks.
Next couple of Sundays.
I'm like, maybe go further with this sentence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be off. For the holiday, and like you said, for September 11th. But if you want to keep in touch with us, you can always email Peter, call TechYes at yahoo.com, or do join us on Facebook, because we want you there. And gosh, isn't just about everyone but you on Facebook, Peter?
Me, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I have you and Debbie.
And your wife. She's not on it.
She's not on it.
No. And my parents aren't on it. That's about it.
It's not an age thing.
No, I know it's not.
Yeah.
My parents actually went to see the movie about Facebook, even though they're not on Facebook. Is that ridiculous?
Well, so did I.
You died.
I thought it sucked.
I thought it was pretty bad, too.
Who cared?
And I like Facebook.
Who cared about those? Yeah, it was like some movie about businessmen.
I thought it was just kind of, yeah. You know, I mean, like, is there something going to happen here?
Like, what's the guy's name that invented all?
Oh, what's his name?
I mean, this dweeb, you know? I mean,
he's a rich dweeb.
Well, yeah.
And now, yeah.
All right, stay tuned. The first interview you're going to hear in a few minutes is with Edward Jaraday. He wrote Killing the Cranes, and it's about his experiences in Afghanistan, including a confrontation with Osama bin Laden, where bin Laden threatened to kill him if he saw him again, and he saw him again, right?
That's called a tease in radio, folks.
Yeah, and also, and Jay Feldman, pardon me, manufacturing hysteria. This is what happens around times of war and economic deprivation, you know, bad times. Did you get the mosquito?
I just brushed him aside.
There you go.
We don't kill the bugs in the studio, remember?
We don't? Why?
No, we let that moth fly around here for 2 hours one
anything.
Night.
But my Tai Chi teacher, you know, she's kind of Buddhist, and she doesn't believe in killing mosquitoes.
Right.
Yeah. And she.
But did you hear about the monster mosquito?
The big ones are coming?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. The other book, the other author that wrote the book, Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America. So I think it ought to be a couple. Well, I know, because I already did them.
Yeah.
A couple of pretty cool interviews. And we will see you on, no, we
three
won't
weeks.
See you ever, unless you come to some event.
We will be talking with you.
Yes, on Sunday, September 18th, but stay with us on Facebook. It's just Facebook.com/nightcall or Facebook.com/nightcall. My website, Peter Werbe, WERPE.com.
And Labor Day, remember what it's all about.
That's right. All right. And thank you, Athena. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes,
and
thank you very much.
And there'll be a podcast, thanks to them, up on our Facebook page.
Later today, 11 hours.
Yeah, in 11 hours. So, have a great one, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
How do you get the most satisfaction? For some career-minded people, it's when they work toward a goal and reach it. The same may apply to you when preparing for your career. In fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design, you need knowledge and skills to get started. That's why you should call ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Call 800-741-5123. ITT Tech's program
programs are designed to help you develop skills and knowledge to pursue your career interest. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So pick up the phone right now and call ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu. When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Everything that rocks.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. When I'm not reading books that tell me about the world in which we live, I try to read novels that are take me away from it all. Things are often pretty grim here in modern day planet, right? And so I was just reading a novel about Sherlock Holmes from the perspective of this wife that was invented for him, Mary Russell. And it's what they call a potboiler. You just can't believe how many things happen to these characters page after page after page. It's extraordinarily exciting. And yet I'm not going to interview the author of that book because I came upon a real-life adventure that's an incredible page-turner where you just can't believe the adventures that the author has had. And my guest is Edward Jaraday. He and the book is called Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through Three Decades of War in Afghanistan. And Edward Jaraday is a journalist, he's a writer, a producer, and he's reported widely from all across conflict zones in Africa, Asia, and elsewhere since 1970, and for the last three decades, as the title suggests, in Afghanistan. And you may have seen his name in any number of publications like the National Geographic, the Christian Science Monitor, the International Herald Tribune, Financial Times, and on and on and on. He's written and edited any number of books, including Afghanistan, the Soviet War, and that was back in 1985, but also about Somalia, Rwanda, and beyond, another book, Populations in Danger, The Crosslines, Essential Field Guide to Afghanistan, and that's been updated in 2006. And Jaraday lives with his family in Cessy, France, near the Swiss border with Geneva. We're reaching him in Geneva right now. Edward Jaraday, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you so much. Glad to be on it.
I have a feeling I didn't do well with the name of your town.
Cessy, that's it. It's a small village just outside Geneva, but on the French side.
Okay, and things are pretty calm there compared to what is related in your book, Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through Three Decades of War in Afghanistan. Are you still in the thick of things, or have you said 3 decades is enough?
Well, no, I have sobered up a bit, but because I have a young family and I don't take the risks, many of which are extremely stupid, over the past years, and I'm much more careful about returning to these war zones. But I do go back on a regular basis to Afghanistan, but I have to say it's a new situation now, and it was ironically far less dangerous during the Soviet war than it is now.
Wow, why is that?
Well, during the Soviet war, a lot of the journalists who covered Afghanistan, we had to operate with the Mujahideen, the Afghan guerrillas, because you couldn't get visas with the Soviet regime. In the beginning you could, but not during the height of the war. So basically you had to resort to walking through the mountains by foot or by horse. Sometimes your trip would take 3, 4, 6 weeks until you got back. You went in clandestinely, illegally from the Soviet point of view, and you traveled, you know, with horses. You slept in villages. You actually only saw the war maybe not 5% of the time. The rest of the time you were basically, as I used to tell my editor, they're paying me to do this wonderful trekking in some of the most beautiful parts of the world, namely the Hindu Kush, which is the extension of the Himalayas. But when you did see the war, I mean, you saw the impact of war, which are often destroyed villages, ruptured irrigation canals. And then every so often you would come across a major operation, such as a major Soviet offensive. But you always felt it was a calculated risk. Nowadays, when you go to Afghanistan, particularly in 2000, let me just start that again because my kids have just got back. I'm going upstairs.
And we don't edit, so we're going to make do. This okay. is like it's live.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That sounds good. Okay. Well, let's
hold out. Let me give you a little chance to breathe. I'll reintroduce you.
Okay.
My guest is Edward Jaraday. We're reaching him in Geneva, Switzerland. He's the author of the book Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through 3 Decades of War in Afghanistan. It's published by Chelsea Green. You can go to chelseagreen.com. I'll have a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com as well. So please continue.
Yes. So nowadays, when you go into Afghanistan, it's become much riskier in the sense that the war has expanded. You have a different type of insurgency. During the Soviet years, the Afghans, you know, they fought a very conventional guerrilla warfare. Nowadays, the Taliban and other insurgent groups have made much more use of IEDs or booby trap bombs, roadside bombs, suicide bombers. Afghans never committed suicide during the 80s and 90s. That's a relatively new phenomenon, which was introduced by Al-Qaeda and other foreign Taliban or foreign groups. Also, when you're in Kabul today, the walls of the embassies of the international organizations have now risen. They've stretched high, and you can't even see the buildings anymore. I still make the point of walking wherever I can. A lot of people think I'm nuts, but I think it's actually a lot safer. When I see a military convoy come in my direction, I go the other way.
Huh.
But the trouble is that nowadays, the international organizations are cutting themselves off from Afghanistan. And I think by doing so, because they don't dare go out. I mean, there are people, the majority of the employees of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, and this is the same also with most of the other embassies, they never go out. They're there for 6 months at a time. They live there. They eat there. And some of the chosen few are allowed to go out for meetings. But what this means is that you are cutting yourself off from the country, which I think is your best defense is to have as much contact as possible. So it is now becoming much more dangerous. Aid workers have been killed, not just soldiers. And of course, there have been some journalists who have been kidnapped and killed.
Edward Jaraday, help me with my memory. There is the famous war correspondent who worked for CNN, and at the beginning of beginning of the Gulf War or the latest war, he interviewed Saddam Hussein and then was fired by CNN.
That's right, Peter.
Yes.
The name will come to me too.
Me too.
The New Zealand guy.
You're right. Well, you know, when I asked him, why does he do all this? Why in the world would he put himself in harm's way? So many people have been killed, and you don't ever know where it's coming from. And he said, well, almost every reporter will tell you that they're doing it because they want to bring the news to the people. He said, don't believe that. He said, they love it. They're in it for the juice. What will you tell us?
Well, you know, there is truth in that, because the reason why I first became involved with Afghanistan is I was a foreign correspondent in Paris. I wanted to become Hemingway, as with every young American who went to Paris. I was also awestruck by a lot of the foreign correspondents and photographers who had come back. They had covered Vietnam. They were covering places like Salvador. They had incredible tales to tell. And I just felt, you know, although I had the privilege of being a young reporter in Paris, I wanted to get out and basically find my own war. And when I did start covering Afghanistan or places like Angola and elsewhere, you know, there is a sense of incredible excitement. But I think, and also I did extremely stupid things. I look at my notes and I think, these notes would not even work in a piece of fiction. They just could not happen that way, and yet they did. I mean, for example, we went with this group of Afghan veterinary students who attacked Jalalabad Air Base, which was a Soviet air base. I mean, how stupid is that? I mean, this was in the beginning of the war, the Soviet war. But we went in anyway, and it was exciting. There was the adrenaline. But I think what happens as time goes on is that you become much more sober. I've never described myself as a war correspondent because wars actually continue even after the fighting has stopped. The impact of war can endure for, you know, decades. So I think it's important to report in a manner that gives people a sense of what's happening or what happened in the past, so that they can make informed decisions, whether it's about policy, whether it's about, you know, what's happening in their own countries. You have to provide a perspective which is honest. And I think that was also something which did not happen, unfortunately, after 9/11, when a lot of the mainstream media in the States, including the New York Times and others, did not do their job of properly, critically reporting what was going on. And the result is we walked into a situation which we tended to view as a black and white situation, but was in fact a situation with lots and lots of grays.
Sure, and by the way, I don't think that I find motivation of interest because it's something I would never do. Because if you said, "Hey, Pete, I'll pick you up in Detroit, and I'll pay your way over to Afghanistan," I'd say, "How about if we just have a beer downtown and you tell me your stories?" My guest is Edward Jiraday. We're speaking to him in Geneva, Switzerland. His book is "Killing the Cranes: A Reporter's Journey Through Three Decades of War in Afghanistan," and you actually came face to face with Osama bin Laden and almost didn't live to tell the tale. What? Give us a little peek at that story.
Yeah, it was in fact the week preceding the final Soviet departure from Afghanistan, which was in February 1989, and my newspaper, the Christian Science Monitor, and the NewsHour, in those days the McNeil era NewsHour, wanted me to go in there and do a couple of stories that would run alongside the actual Soviet departure. So I went in for a quick trip initially with a very well-known photographer for National Geographic, Steve McCurry, the one who did that very famous photograph of the girl with the green eyes. I think a lot of people know that photograph. And we went in with a couple of Afghans who were working with us and went down to the front lines in eastern Afghanistan near Jalalabad. Now, the Soviets had already withdrawn from that area some months beforehand, and the Afghan communist government forces were fighting against Mujahideen and putting up quite a fight. But going down to the front line, there were a lot of Afghans, but I also noticed there was a series of trenches with Arab fighters, and they're very easy to distinguish from the others. And this very tall Arab, I mean, incredibly tall man, came up to me and demanded to know what I was doing in Afghanistan, and this was not my jihad, he declared. This is not your holy war. And I said, well, look, you know, I'm a reporter, and I also resent the fact that he was trying to bully me around in Afghanistan, which is not his country. So I said, look, I'm a guest in this country, and I will leave when my hosts require me to leave, just I'm sure you will leave as you're also a guest. And, of course, he did not take too kindly to that. But we actually had quite an interesting conversation for about 45 minutes talking about jihad, about Ali Kitab, which means of the book, meaning that you are of the Old Testament. You're either Christian, Jewish, or Muslim. And what initially was a pretty aggressive discussion became actually quite an interesting discussion. But you could see that the Afghans who were behind me, I very soon had 20 or 30 Afghans behind me, and you had 20 or 30, 40 Arabs on the other side. They did not like each other. The Afghans also just looked at the Arabs as being sources of funding, and the Arabs had this arrogance toward the Afghans because they thought they were not real Muslims, and that it was these extremists, these Islamic extremists, were the ones who were going to show them the way. So when I was about to leave, he sort of said, well, I tried to shake his hand, and he refused to touch it. And, you know, I pointed out, well, you know, it's interesting because Afghans actually, even the ones who dislike you and will probably kill you, will always shake your hand. Because that's part of the hospitality. It's part of the tradition.
Well, shaking the hand of Osama bin Laden would have been an incredible. But go ahead.
He refused. He refused. And as I left, he said, if I see you again, I'll kill you. And, of course, a week later, we went back with a film crew. And the Afghans said, we're going to take you down to the front lines. And I said, well, you know, there are these Arabs there, and I'm not sure it's a good idea. And the Afghan commander said, these Arabs don't tell us what to do. This is our country. We're going to take you there. And I thought, oh, my God. So we went to the front line, and sure enough, a very nasty confrontation broke out between the Afghans and the Arabs. One of them pulled a gun on my producer, cameraman, Tom Woods, who's very tall, blonde-haired American, and who had actually been holding his camera down beneath his knees, but he had it on, and they saw the red light. And we almost got killed, and was really. And I thought to myself, after all these years, I'm going to get killed now in this ugly skirmish between Afghans and Arabs. And we just barely managed to break away. And as the car pulled off, two mortars landed at the same time. And, I mean, the stories just went on and on. And it was only some years later, because, of course, in those days, no one had heard of Osama bin Laden. You know, he was just one of many Arabs in Peshawar, in Pakistan, but doing a lot of support work and sending in fighters into eastern Afghanistan. And it was only some years later I bumped into the same commander, and he said, you do remember that tall man you saw? And I said, yes. And he said, well, that was Osama bin Laden. And then, of course, everything clicked into place.
In your book, Killing the Cranes, there are, and I'm so glad to see it, because often, you know, publishers aren't willing to do a lot of glossy color photos, so these photographs are absolutely incredible. And there is one of Osama bin Laden in the description under it. It gives it a little brief description of the tale you just told about your confrontation with Osama bin Laden. The photograph there, is that a stock photo, or is that something?
It's a stock photo.
Okay, you didn't take that one, but you took a lot of these, right?
No. Well, we filmed, but we never actually got footage of the group, because unfortunately when my friend Tom Woods was trying to film, they saw the camera and he had to switch it off. And then what happened after that was we actually had a car accident in Pakistan, which broke the camera in half. It was a $50,000 camera.
Oh.
But I was always convinced that Steve McCurry must have taken some photographs, and I keep urging him to go through his archives, because I'm convinced he must have some of bin Laden without him knowing it.
The book is Killing the Cranes, a reporter's journey through three decades of war in Afghanistan, and my guest is Edward Jaraday. He has had, I mean, this is one of many, many adventures. Well, how does, you know, coming face to face with this guy that could kill thousands at the, you know, the drop of a hat, what role does fear come? I would almost think that you would become, at least I would, I guess, become paralyzed with fear, or doesn't one? I mean, what, you know, here you're thinking, this is it. Why did I ever agree to come here? What's the thought process in any of the many tales you tell that were so harrowing in your book?
Well, I mean, I actually have one of my first chapters is called A Coward in Afghanistan, because I felt quite strongly that I had to admit that I was pretty nervous in the beginning when the war first began, and I took this bus ride across, you know, to Kabul, and in those days the Mujahideen were just beginning to step up their attacks. The Soviets hadn't invaded yet. They were hitting trucks and buses every 2 or 3 days, and I was paralyzed with fear and trepidation that I would be shot by some sniper, you know, somewhere. And of course, nothing happened. But the fact is, I think one was nervous. And another thing which you learn, I think, as an experienced journalist, is that if you're not nervous, that's actually your downfall.
Really?
You should always be in trepidation of something.
It does, but in your book, you describe that many of your colleagues actually were, you know, shot to death or died under other circumstances.
We lost quite a few journalists, also quite a few of my Afghan friends who were, you know, intellectuals. For example, the dean of philosophy of Kabul University, who was also a journalist, Afghan journalist, one of the few journalists who actually wrote a very independent magazine during the 1980s, which didn't take sides, but which pointed out a lot of the strengths and weaknesses of what was happening. And he was assassinated by a rather nasty piece of work who we supported during the 1980s. He was an Islamic fundamentalist called Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who is now one of the leading insurgents, you know, attacking and killing American and NATO soldiers in Afghanistan and civilians. And he killed hundreds of people deliberately, and including journalists. Two were good friends of mine, a British-Polish journalist called Andy, and another one, an Afghan called Mirwais, who worked for the BBC. And these guys were just killed, brutally murdered, or shot to death because they were actually doing the reporting they were supposed to be doing. Hekmatyar is actually has infiltrated the Afghan government, the current government, with his people in many, many ways, but at the same time is also fighting an insurgency against the Americans and NATO forces.
Well, it's interesting. This almost sounds like a final question. It's not. You have a quote from Sebastian Younger on your front page of Killing the Cranes, a truly remarkable book about a completely misunderstood country. And I guess I was thinking, well, why is it completely? And then I thought if someone said, describe what is happening either culturally or politically in Afghanistan, and I try to stay abreast of things, reading books like Killing the Crane, yours. It is almost impossible, I would say, for us to understand it, wouldn't you? I mean, unless you read your book,
of course. Yeah, you know, people often tell me, they say, you know, you're an expert in Afghanistan. And I always say, well, actually, I haven't been back for 2 weeks, so I'm no longer an expert. Or in fact, I always consider myself a specialist, not an expert. The situation changes constantly. Also, to try and even understand all the different tribal elements, ethnic elements, cultural elements is something which you really have to develop a feel for. And you know, one of the problems, I think, with a lot of the military who go there, even those officers, for example, who really take their work very, very seriously and try and understand the country, they do the right reading. I mean, I met some officers, I was incredibly impressed by the reading they had done. They are there only for 6 to 12 months. And it's only after 6 to 12 months that you actually even begin to get an inkling of what's going on. And secondly, if you're a soldier with a gun, you will never, ever know what these people are really thinking, because they have to, as a means of survival. Most Afghans will have 1 foot in either camp, or if possible 3 or 4 feet in different camps, and that's what they've always done. And they will ride the waves in the best way possible. They're afraid of the Taliban in many areas, or the insurgents, but they're also afraid of the NATO forces. So they will respond in a manner that they think the people who are talking with them want to hear. And anyone who says that they really understand the situation, you know they're not, because they can't possibly.
We just have a couple minutes left with Edward Jaraday and his book, Killing the Cranes, and trying to cram all of his experiences and his observations into 25 minutes is almost impossible. That's why he's written a book. But you say a military solution is impossible. I think the vast majority of American people from the polls, if you said, okay, we're leaving 100% tomorrow, which, of course, you couldn't do logistically, but I would say that everybody would say, good. Should we just get out of there and just go?
Well, I think you can't just abandon Afghanistan, but I think there has to be, I mean, from my own personal point of view, I think it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, and never did, to have the military involved, because they're asking soldiers to be aid workers at the same time, and you can't do both. What is important, though, is not to do what we did at the end of the 1980s and early 90s, when we fully abandoned Afghanistan and this allowed the extremists to come in. And there were sufficient warnings by Afghan commanders, by people within the State Department, saying you cannot drop Afghanistan like that. You have to do something to avert the sort of Beirut type civil war that will certainly break out. I think what we need to do now is really realize that it's going to take years and years to help Afghanistan. We can help Afghanistan. We can't resolve Afghanistan. That's up to the Afghans. But so much money, billions, have been poured into Afghanistan. We've made use of contractors, you know, companies that have absolutely no commitment to the country whatsoever. There are a lot of aid agencies that are doing extremely good work, very slowly, but they're working with local communities. And this is what makes things so difficult, because there are no quick fixes. So I think, you know, a gradual or fast pullout is going to be necessary one way or another, but then the commitment has to go with long-term investment in Afghanistan involving ordinary Afghans. You know, we've propped up the warlords. We've propped up privileged people who are just in it for themselves. But, you know, this is, I think people are, people are beginning to understand that, but the we also realize that probably many areas will be, you know, retaken by the Taliban or other insurgent groups. But it doesn't mean that it'll be bad, because there are many conservatives in the Afghan government and the Karzai government who are far more conservative than the Taliban. But, you know, it's not a simple solution. And, in fact, even to use the word solution is probably the wrong word to use.
Yeah, under 1 minute, unfortunately. Are you going back?
Well, absolutely. I'd like to go back. We're trying to, you know, also help try and make internationals aware that they have to start talking to Afghans who live in the countryside and who quite obviously are in contact with various insurgent groups, but also the government. But there has to be people have got to get back to talking, which, I mean, Afghans love to talk. And even if it takes months and months and years, that's what they're going to have to do.
Well, I want to thank you so much. I had about 35 more questions, but they're all in the book. Killing the Cranes, A Reporter's Journey Through 3 Decades of War in Afghanistan. My guest has been Edward Jurday. We reached him in Geneva, Switzerland. And an absolutely incredible book. You can either Google the book, Killing the Cranes, or you can go to chelseagreen.com, or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. Thank you so much for being on the broadcast.
Thank you so much, Peter. Very kind of you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. You know, we live in a country where our freedoms are guaranteed. We have a foundation document called the Constitution of the United States, and the Founding Fathers were thoughtful enough to put in the Bill of Rights, which gives us the right of free speech, assembly, press, all this stuff. Isn't that great? So we don't ever have to worry about being scapegoated, right? Like happened, say, in Nazi Germany, where Jews were scapegoated for the problems of that country, or in Indonesia, where the Chinese get scapegoated for the problems of that country and on. I mean, a lot of scapegoating around the world. It's kind of what happens when people can't understand what's going on and they figure, well, it couldn't be our leaders or it couldn't be the system. It's got to be them over there. Well, we've had some problems along the way in our nation as well. And I'd like to introduce to you the author of a new book. The book is called Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America. The author is Jay Feldman. Jay Feldman has a very nice literary history. He's the author of the book When the Mississippi Ran Backwards. He's also written a lot for the Smithsonian, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated, Gourmet, and the New York Times, publications like that. He's also written for television and the stage, and he's the author of the novel Suitcase Sefton and the American Dream. His website is jfeldman.com, and we're reaching him in his office in Davis, California. Jay Feldman, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you.
So you date modern America with essentially the hysteria, the manufactured hysteria that began with the U.S. entrance into World War One. Is that correct?
Yes. The reason for that is that while nativism had played a role in U.S. history, particularly in the 19th century, with the prejudice against Irish Catholics and Chinese, what we find in the run-up to the United States entry into World War One is a new phenomenon. We find the government harnessing those fears and prejudices, in this case against Germans and German Americans, and using that hysteria that's created to accomplish a crackdown on civil liberties and a suppression of dissent. The Wilson government, Woodrow Wilson administration, had an agency. Wilson established a new agency in the months preceding America's entry into the war, called the Committee for Public Information. It was a propaganda agency, and they put out films, they published pamphlets, they put up roadside advertising, and the intent of this committee was to create fear and hatred of all things German and, by extension, German Americans. So,
and in a way, the thing's foreign as well. Any foreign ideas, which took in quite a breadth of the American immigrant population, particularly ones that were labor and radical oriented.
Right, and that especially intensified right after the war, because the Russian Revolution created a great alarm among the business community. And it was interesting how the fears that were directed towards Germans, German Americans, pacifists, socialists, Mennonites, anybody that was against the war would automatically became suspect. It's interesting how quickly, once the war ended, those fears were suddenly projected upon wobblies, communists, socialists, anarchists, anybody on the left. In fact, there was the Overman Committee, which was studying German brewing interests as they affected German American opinion in this country. And after the war, suddenly they looked like they were out of business, and they just switch the spotlight to Russians and Bolsheviks, and the report they finally issued had an unlikely title, something along the lines of "An Investigation of German Brewing Interests and Bolsheviks."
You know, you mentioned along the way the people that were suspect by the government and some of the population were the Wobblies, and we should remind people that's the Industrial Workers of the World, the nickname, and they still exist. You can go to IWW.org and kind of see why they were feared at the time, although they were much, much larger. The book is Manufacturing Hysteria by Jay Feldman, and but you talk about that the hysteria was, let's go for both the words. What manufactured, and you mentioned just some films came out, and was it that successful? And also, did it rise to the level of hysteria?
Well, yes, it really did. To the extent that there were attacks on, start with the first part of your question, the manufactured. The press picked it up, and the New York Herald, for example, published a list over the course of a couple of months of every German alien living in New York City. Well, if that wasn't, you know, enough, they also published these people's addresses. And they later issued that list in a separate pamphlet that you could buy.
What would be its purpose? In other words,
its purpose was to spy on your neighbors.
Wow. And these German Americans, both immigrants and German American citizens, it wasn't like the 1930s where there actually was, like silver shirts and the German American Bund. I mean, there wasn't, or was there? Was there, was
no,
among
no,
the,
not, nothing to speak of, no.
I mean, there wasn't great sympathy for the Kaiser or anything.
Well, the thing is that, in among any ethnic group, you will always find an emotional tie to the former homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have social clubs where German American workers would go to eat a bratwurst and drink a stein of beer. So those became, you know, quote, breeding grounds of sedition. As far as the hysteria goes, the attacks, this anti-German sentiment, which was whipped up by the Committee for Public Information and the press, resulted in dozens and hundreds, really, of attacks on Germans and German American citizens over the course of these months, culminating in the lynching of a man in Collinsville, Illinois, on April 4th, 1918, which was one day short of 1 year that the United States had been in the war. So it was a serious a business. It wasn't just, you know, an incident here and there.
Well, as you mentioned before, the Wobblies, Industrial Workers of the World, opposed World War One, and yet initially there wasn't great support for it. I mean, I remember reading that President Wilson called for 1 million volunteers and got about 20,000, so they actually had to institute the draft.
Right.
So, I mean, and it wasn't like we were attacked. It was this war that was so far away in Europe. It's amazing that some American citizens just became literally, to, you know, echo the title of your book, Manufacturing Hysteria, they became hysterical. Any is there a mass psychological explanation, or are we just looking at the history?
No, it's just history, and it's partly, you know, the dark side of human nature. Let's be clear about this. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
And you gave a couple of good examples in your introduction. But the thing is that, and Peter, as Americans, we've always been taught to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And so we've been given, I'd call it a whitewashed version of our own history. Well, let's just say we look at it through rose-colored glasses. Many of the dark parts of our history are not taught in the textbooks. But the thing is, and as I mentioned in my book, and you see how it carries through really to the present day, this tendency, because we haven't really acknowledged it and incorporated into our full identity, we seem destined to repeat this history over and over and over again. I think if we were to go back and stop and look at this, we might get a different idea of how we can behave. Because there are so many admirable and honorable things about this country, we can hold ourselves to a higher standard, and this would be one of the areas where we can improve.
The book is Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, and we've only talked about scapegoating so far, but the rest of the subtitle is Surveillance and Secrecy in Modern America, and we're dating that from the run-up to World War I. My guest is Jay Feldman. He is the author. It's published by Pantheon, and the author's website is Jay Feldman, JFELDMAN.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE. .com. Well, that old saying, it's been hacked apart so many different times that I'm not sure the exact wording of it, but essentially says that if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And most of this seems to come about during war. I mean, when the Constitution is gone. So Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Wilson probably the World War I era, probably the greatest attack on civil liberties in American history. And then you get up to the Vietnam War and World War II with Japanese being put in concentration camps. And when we go to the modern day, and so people could look back and say, that was terrible what Roosevelt did to the Japanese. That was terrible that Wilson, passed the Espionage Act and all this. But now, Muslims, they were the people that attacked us. So although that was bad, this is a real and current threat. So we jump right to the modern 9/11 era, and there's you hear talk radio, with right-wing talk radio. They're saying, who attacked us? They weren't Christians. They weren't Hindus. They weren't Jewish. They were Muslim. So talk to me a little about that.
All right. Before I do, I'd like to disagree with one minor point that you made, that Wilson administration was responsible for the worst attack on civil liberties. I would put that as into the Cold War. I would, if I had to identify one era where civil liberties were came under the worst attack, I would say it was the Cold War era.
We can argue another time. But I forgot about that area, the communists. What about the communists in the 50s?
Right,
that was horrible. All right, let's
it was a
tough race, I would agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's also establish one other thing is when we talk about minorities, we think racial and ethnic minorities, but they can also be political minorities. They can also be religious, or they can be sexual minorities. It's largely forgotten that 5,000 homosexuals lost their jobs in the federal government during the Cold War McCarthy era because they were, quote, security risks, unquote.
They could be, quote, blackmailed. That was the rationale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now getting to your question about Muslim Americans and Arab Americans, it's the same pattern. Thinking is, there's a boogeyman out there, and we need to keep an eye on that boogeyman. And while we're doing that, we're also going to keep an eye on everybody else. So the surveillance, of course, has reached such a fine degree with electronic devices that they now know from your cell phone basically where you are all the time if they want to know. There's a lot of collateral damage that comes with this. A lot of innocent people suffer along with the few evildoers. And remember Benjamin Franklin saying, those who would trade liberty for security will have neither.
Right.
Here's the thing is, and it's not only Muslim Americans and Arab Americans right now either. It's also Latinos. There's a pretty heavy-duty anti-immigration movement. It started in Arizona, but it's spreading. In Virginia, they're passing a similar law to Arizona's SB 1070, which requires immigrants to have their papers on them at all time. Now, I don't know who they're afraid of in Virginia. Who's going to cross the border from Delaware into Virginia?
Maybe Irish or Polish they're concerned about. Obviously, they're not. I mean, because there's a lot of illegal immigration from European countries and also from Canada, and that's not who the prejudice against. It's always these brown-skinned people that are taking our jobs, right?
Yeah, and also we also have to point out that homophobia is also on the rise. But here's the key point that...
Wait a minute. You think so? That it's, I mean, you know, it's weird when you have periods of adjustment of social attitudes. You have a greater and greater acceptance of, say, minorities, whether, like you said, they're religious or racial or sexual, gender, whatever. And so there's certainly greater acceptance of gay marriage, of gays in general. On the other hand, there is this backlash by people that can't deal with it.
Right. So here's the key to what happens here and what people need to think about. The curtailing of the civil liberties of any particular group, be they ethnic, racial, political, religious, sexual, the curtailing of any minorities group is the first of any minority's rights is the first step towards the curtailment of all of our civil liberties. People think that, I mean, we've been taught and we tend to think that democracy is a given. It's here forever. Well, all you have to do is look at Weimar Germany to see how quickly democracy can disappear.
1920s and the early 1930s, right.
Yeah. And remember, the National Socialists, the Nazis, didn't overthrow any government. They were elected. And Hitler didn't overthrow anybody. He was appointed.
And a key thing to remember that, he never had a parliament, he never had an electoral majority. In fact, in many cases, the socialists and the communists had a greater vote total combined. I don't think they ever got more than like a third of the votes. But aggressive people that aren't concerned with the niceties of civil liberties and political democracy have a capacity that's frightening.
Yes. And remember now, what Pastor Niemöller, who lived through Nazi Germany and was eventually interned in a concentration camp himself, he said, and this goes back to my earlier point about the infringement on any minority group's rights is the first step towards the infringement on all. He said, Pastor Niemöller said, first they came for the trade unionists, and I wasn't a unionist, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for the communists. I wasn't a communist, so I didn't speak up. And then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak up.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the formulation about, that us, the need for us to be concerned about everyone's civil liberties, the guarantees that we have under the Constitution is extraordinarily important. Looking at the obverse of that is the book by Jay Feldman, my guest, Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America. You know, we were just mentioned earlier about the prejudice against immigrants, and this is not recent, as you indicate in your book, Manufacturing Hysteria. Back in the 1930s, there was what they called El Repro... I knew I always going to stumble over my Spanish. El repatriado. The repatriation in English.
Repatriado.
Yeah. And people from Detroit, for instance, that were American citizens were just scooped up and dumped back in Mexico.
Well, there was a very large Latino, particularly Mexican community in Detroit at that time. And during the Depression, the fear in this case was they're taking our jobs. Many of them, including American citizens, were, as you say, scooped up and sent back to Mexico. Many of those people, even the ones who are not citizens, had been in this country for decades and came into this country when there was no border enforcement. In other words, it was not against any law to cross into the United States from Mexico when these people entered. But technically speaking, yes, they were not citizens. They were, many of them, sent home. And families were broken up because they had children who were American citizens by virtue of being born here. And in many cases, the mother would stay with the children, and the father would return to Mexico. As well, many Mexicans who were citizens, Mexican-Americans who were U.S. citizens, decided, look, I don't want to deal with this. They just left. Now, that was nationwide, between 500,000 and 1 million people were sent back to Mexico, some of whom had never even seen Mexico. Now, I find it astonishing that our history textbooks would somehow have missed. I mean, that was a lot of people. The thing is that it happened again in the 50s. And the Eisenhower administration had an Operation Wetback, and it took them 6 months to deport 500,000 people, the same number that had been sent home in a decade 20 years earlier. And now, so this is the third time it's happened. What's wrong with this picture? It doesn't seem to be working. That approach doesn't seem to be effective.
There's actually a documentary about this. People in the Detroit Mexican community.
That's right.
Found
I know about.
Yeah, there were so many people that were ashamed of that. And if you look at Repatriado, I think I'll put a link on my website as well. Mm-hmm. We only have a little bit of time left. And as you look into the future, and this is always a hard one, I mean, are we more at risk to lose civil liberties, less at risk? Is there a greater understanding among the population? Because every time we're under attack, and, I mean, there's two, I mean, the feeling we're under attack, and the other part of it is, economic bad times. That's when people start looking for the scapegoat, right?
Right. That's very true. Well, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't say for sure. But what I can tell you for sure is that we're in much greater danger than ever of being spied upon because of electronic surveillance. And the tendency towards secrecy in government is still surviving. President Obama, as much as I admire him for certain things, pledged open government when he was elected. Well, it didn't take him but a few days in office, you know, to carry out the same kind of secret policies that all of his predecessors did. So, as far as our rights, we have to remain vigilant because without that vigilance, we don't have any control over our government or what happens to us.
Well, you don't have a crystal ball, understandably. And secondly, though, when you say we have to be vigilant, and I'm never sure what kind of form that vigilance takes. I mean, one of the things we don't want to do is we don't just want to watch it. We have to create a political will to not let anybody's civil liberties or civil rights be withdrawn because they might, or because the big capital they. And that means being politically active, politically engaged, not letting politicians get away with using manufacturing hysteria. They did. Jay Feldman wrote this great book called Manufacturing Hysteria. See the other eras in our history when our rights and liberties were under attack. The subtitle is A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance and Secrecy in Modern America. And I appreciate you bringing in surveillance and secrecy right at the end, because we never really got to it. That's why people write books, because they look at these events and these trends extensively. It is published by Pantheon, and you can go to Jay Feldman's website. It's jfeldman.com, jfeldman.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Jay Feldman, thanks for being on my broadcast.
Oh, the pleasure has been mine, and thank you for your interest.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Gathered in their masses, just
watches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning. As the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind. Poisoning. Brainwash minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. Stops turning. Ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power. And as God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling. For the sin, Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh!